Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives, and I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime.
Aero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolf? No, he isn't.
Huh?
Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Well, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight.
Fooey.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTR.
And now, here is OTR.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Richard Diamond Private Detective. This episode is from November 12, 1949. The episode is entitled The 50,000 Buck Diamond Heist, and as I record this, we wave goodbye to Rocky Fortune, and for the time being, we also wave goodbye to Rocky Jordan. Rocky Jordan will be back, though, after The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe ends. Unless, of course, I've got this detective block confused with another detective block, which is Sam Spade, which is entirely possible. I'm kind of discombobulated. I haven't had sleep in 48 hours. And we say hello to The Third Man, starring Orson Welles, also known as The Lives of Harry Lime. And the episode is entitled See Naples and Live, from August 10th, 1951. And then after that is The Saint, from January 7th, 1951. The episode is entitled Ladies Never Lie Much. And The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, from March 16th, 1951. The episode is entitled Midnight Ride. And we have Alan Ladd starring in Box 13, from October 17th, 1947. The episode is entitled The First Letter, which means that this is the first episode of Box 13. Box 13 is kind of like Let George Do It, only without Bob Bailey. And Box 13 doesn't have a cute or smart female sidekick, but they will in about three episodes. They're played by a comedian that I can't think of the name of, except her last name was Picker. I can't remember her first name, but I'll let you get back to that next week. I will figure all that out, and you'll know it when I know it, or remember it. And it was produced by Mayfair Productions, which is Alan Ladd's own production company, and Mayfair Productions produced a couple of radio programs. This Alan Ladd Box 13 show, though, was syndicated, so it went out to independent radio stations, those that weren't probably mostly with Mutual, but maybe some people like NBC or ABC or even CBS would pick it up, but they would have to buy it in order to do that, and then they could recoup their time by selling their own products from their own individual customers on their own individual radio station. That's how that worked. And syndication wasn't new, it just wasn't done very much back then. So enjoy these, and I will see you all back here next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise. Oh, by the way, for me, today is November 4th, 2020. And even though I don't know what happened, you will know what happened after you hear this, because even though I'm 3 weeks ahead, by the time that this gets posted, I'm late. And I'm late to the party. Anyway, if you can figure it out, email me and explain it to me, and I will read your letter on the air. So enjoy all of these shows, and I'll see you back here next week, like I said before.
Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Diamond Detective Agency, a corpse to fit every pocketbook.
Rick?
Oh, hello, Helen, baby. Let me sit down. Oh.
Rick, what's the matter? You sounded like your arches just broke.
You got the right idea, baby. Oh, but your geography is cockeyed.
Are you really hurt, Rick?
Now, believe it or not, I was trampled by a herd of horses.
Oh, Rick, you idiot. Now, tell me what did happen.
Okay, one horse. He ruined me for life.
You went horseback riding? Oh, I don't believe it.
Yeah, want to see my bow legs?
You actually did. Uh-oh. Took a girl to get you to ride a horse. But it was some slinky blonde.
No, baby, it was a Palomino. And look, let's get off horses. I've had enough to last me. What's with the early call?
Early? Rick, did you just get in? It's after 11.
I was dreaming of you, baby. You wouldn't have wanted me to stop just to get into the office.
It's probably a whole harem.
Helen, you got to stop that peeking.
You read the morning papers?
They come out in the morning?
Now, you stop that. Did you read them?
Well, didn't have a bet down. Why? You in the society page again?
Oh, much more exciting than that. The police commissioner's house was robbed of $50,000 worth of diamonds last night, and his gardener was murdered.
What?
I thought that would fetch you. Better get a paper. The commissioner's statement's written in blood.
Yeah, and if things don't wind up fast, tomorrow's statement will be in Walt Levinson's blood. It'll be his case.
Now, you stay out of it, Rick. This thief cuts throats.
Yeah, I'm scared.
Are you, Rick? Well, I'll come over tonight and I'll frighten you at close range. Say 8.
I'll practice my knee knocking so I'll be in good form.
And stay in. No nightclubs.
At the sound of the castanets, Francis can open the door. It'll be me and my knees. See you tonight, baby. Bye.
This the Diamond Detective Agency?
Just like it says on the door. Come in and close it gently. My Japanese beetle's still asleep.
Asleep?
He's got a better union. Sit down, Mr.
Burton, Phineas Burton.
What can I do for you, Mr. Burton?
Well, I want to hire you if it's agreeable.
Well, for $100 a day in expenses, I'm pretty agreeable.
Well, that's fine. I have a package I want you to deliver to a party in Philadelphia.
You can get a messenger for $5, or if you're hard up, a carrier pigeon for a handful of popcorn. Why a detective?
Well, I'm perfectly capable of judging for myself what I need, Mr. Diamond. Now, here's $300. There will be $200 more for you after you make safe delivery of the package.
Why?
Why?
Three-letter word meaning why you want to pay me for 5 days when the trip to Philly and back can be done in a few hours.
Well, Mr. Diamond, I simply want you to drop everything else and take this job immediately. And that is my reason for the added payment.
Oh, all right, I'll take your money. Just as soon as you tell me what's in the package, who it goes to, and why it's so important that I take it personally.
I can't tell you that.
Okay, it's your problem. Now, where did I leave my soap chips?
Do you have to know?
Of course. How can I do any washing without soap?
I mean about this package.
Oh, no, no. I can recommend another agency who will do it for $25 and no questions.
Oh, very well. Mr. Elliott will meet you at the Philadelphia Station Information Desk at 2 o'clock today. Oh. I will wire him your description and he will make the contact. As for the package, it contains some very valuable papers, which Mr. Elliott is afraid his wife will try to intercept.
I see.
He commissioned me to find the best man I could to bring the package to him.
Oh, you must have read my ad.
You'll have to leave immediately. Mr. Elliott is very anxious to get the package. You call me at the Astor when you return, and I'll send over the rest of the money. Good day.
It may be at that.
What?
Forget it. Burton left the package on my desk with the money. He was a thin guy, had a funny pot that made him look as if he'd swallowed a basketball. He pushed it out the door and waddled after it. When a guy insists on throwing money in my lap, I get suspicious. And when I remembered the robbery of the night before, I got that lousy feeling again. Now, paragraph 4, section B, rule A of the Detective's Code of Ethics says, quote, upon receiving money to deliver package, detective must never open same. It is unethical. Yeah, who's ethical? Well, surprise. No wonder basketball had been nervous. At the bottom of the box were 5 pretty little diamonds. About 10 grand worth, I'd guess. Of course, it may have been that Burton thought diamonds should belong to Diamond, but my bet was on a frame-up. A frame that cost the real heisters 10 grand out of 50. But was aimed to get him a nice picture to fit the frame. Me. Yeah?
Is this Mr. Diamond?
Oh, hello, Burton. Something on your mind?
Oh, I happened to be in a store across the street and I noticed you hadn't left yet. You will leave right away, won't you?
Just as soon as I arrange things, Phineas.
Remember, it takes an hour and a half to get to Philadelphia. I don't want you to be late.
I'll bet you don't.
It was just to make sure. You understand.
Oh, yes. I understand. You can dribble your basketball home now.
I beg your pardon?
Skip it. Bye. Burton's call ended nearly all doubts. I was being framed, all right. And the trap required my leaving for Penn Station right away. I dropped the diamonds into what was left of a quart of milk I had for lunch the day before, put the bottle on the floor by the wastebasket. Then I took the package, rewrapped it, and went out to hail a cab. I made one stop at a toy shop, then headed for Penn Station. As I entered, I saw a pair of familiar figures.
Rick. Okay, what's the gag? I got the tip, but even you wouldn't joke about this case.
Now, Walt, I might joke about mass murder, but never about the commissioner being robbed. Is he making speeches yet?
Yeah, that's okay, Shamus. This is one time when you're one diamond too many.
Why, Otis, you're becoming a wit.
Why not?
You're halfway there.
Oh, Lieutenant, he's picking on me again.
You deserve it, Otis. Now, shut up. Rick, I know the tip was phony, but the commissioner was there when it came in. I had to act on it.
Tip? Well, don't be smug. I've got one, too. A fifth at Hialeah.
Now, don't start that. It was a tip that you were taking the commissioner's diamonds out of town.
Oh, now, Walt.
And don't Walt me. I said I knew the tip was phony, but with the commissioner taking scalps all down the line,
Don't apologize, Walt. I know. Come on, Sergeant. Show me a good frisk, and I'll recommend you to all my criminal friends.
Oh. Yeah, he's clean, Lieutenant.
Now, Rick, let's see that package, and then you can go.
This? Oh, no, I can't. It's secret.
Don't play games, Rick, please.
Oh, all right, but it's going to spoil my surprise.
Well, okay. Give me your word it's got nothing to do with this case, and I won't bother to open it.
No, I'm hurt. I absolutely insist that you open the package right now.
But, Rick, you know I trust
Lieutenant
you.
Lieutenant Levinson, do your duty. My purity must not be suspicioned.
Oh, anything to get this over with.
You were,
What? It's only a pair of dolls.
You were expecting maybe my gallstones?
Oh, dolls. The Shamus plays with dolls.
Better read the tag, Gordis, before your ears get any longer and they draft you for a mule team.
Tag? Sure. But what? To my beloved Otis from his Ricky. Oh.
Rick.
Now, don't be a grouch, Walt. The other one's for you.
For me? Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Walt. I couldn't resist it. Anyhow, you spoiled my surprise to Otis. It was our anniversary.
What? Our anniversary? We ain't even related.
Oh, you don't remember. Oh, Otis.
Lieutenant, can I go back to traffic? I can't stand much more.
Oh, shut up, Otis. Rick, if we weren't such good friends,
Walt. Hey, now you're upset.
Upset? Why should I be upset? Just because two hoods lift 50 grand in ice from the commissioner, or because it's dumped in my lap with the murder of the gardener, or that I'm given 24 hours to break the case and then get a tip that leads me to a friend who decides to play games and wreck my sergeant beyond repair? Now, why should I be upset?
Oh, this, here you are, Lieutenant. But take it easy. That's a second bottle of bicarb today.
Walt, you rate an apology and I make it. I'll do better than that. I'll help you if you'll let me.
Well, I can sure use your help, Rick. I haven't got a single lead. You want to look at the corpse first?
May as well. Has he got a record?
No. And the commissioner swears he was honest. Probably stumbled onto the thieves and they had to put him away.
How about the rest of the servants?
They were all out. The commissioner and his wife were at a party. They'd given the entire staff the night off, but I guess perhaps the gardener returned a little early.
Yeah, well, let's go down and take a look at him. I've got a personal interest that makes me want to crack this case.
A client?
Call him an ex-client. I'll explain him later. Come on.
Here he is, Rick.
Nasty cut. How was it made?
Well, it could have been a sharp knife, but it's a safer bet that it was a razor.
Remind me not to go to his barber. What safecracker's got enough nerve to pull his job, Walt?
Well, I got three guys that could fit the job, but not one of them has ever been known to carry a weapon of any sort, much less a razor.
Correction. One dealer, that gardener, is playing a lousy joke on us.
I suppose this could have been the first time one of them carried a razor.
I don't buy that, neither do you. Give me the names. I want to talk to them. Maybe I can get a lead of some sort.
Sure. Here they are. And please, Rick, call me if you get anything.
If I can find the nickel. Bye. As far as I could see, I had three things to match up. One, the careless barber. Two, the safecracker with nerve enough to rob the police commissioner. And three, the reason why I was picked as the pigeon. I gave up the idea of hunting for Burton, the guy who came into my office. He was probably a flunky and not worth running down. So I checked the names I got from Walt, grabbed a cab, and headed for the Bronx. The first turned out to be an ex-con trying to go straight by working in a Bronx hash house. The second was likely, but he'd kissed his wife with a beer bottle and spent last night in jail. At the third address, down in Greenwich Village, I met a landlady with gin-loaded tonsils and a cute mustache. She tipped me that my third prospect, Vincent Mayer, might be playing pinochle at Pietro's, which turned out to be a cafe with a 30-foot bar, three tables, and a back room. Hey, barkeep.
Yeah, what'd it be, friend?
Milk, no chaser.
Milk? Who makes it? Oh, you mean like from cows. Never carried the stuff.
Where can I find Vincent Mayer?
Why don't you ask me, handsome?
Well, hello, baby.
Now, do I look like a baby?
No.
My name's Jean. What do they call you?
Take your pick. Call me Rick.
Hey, you talk funny. But you're awful nice. Too nice to be hunting for Vince Mayer. He's a bad boy, Rick.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to be a hero. Where is he?
In the back room. There. The guy with the light hair. But be careful.
Thanks, baby. I'll buy you a palace.
You gotta give me for 80 mil, Joe, 20 clubs, 20 spades, and 40 pinochle.
What? No diamonds?
Hey. Well, look who's here. What do you want, Chalmers?
Vince the Iceman, isn't it? Well, now, let's see. Sing Sing, class of 38. Where's your school tie, Vince?
The name is Mr. Mayer to you, Diamond, and privates are not welcome here. It's a closed game.
Yeah. Move on.
Give me a reason.
You want to play dead?
Oh, come on, Vince. You're not going to get upset just because I think you robbed the commissioner. You did, didn't you?
I told my story to the cops.
I'll bet. But you didn't answer my question. And here's another. Who's your barber?
You're asking for it, Diamond.
I was brought up right. Now, let's get off this cat and mouse kick. I want some answers, Vince.
Do you?
That's right, Junior. I do.
All right. Cool him, Joe.
Hey, what? Oh.
All right, Joe. Stop it. That's enough, Joe. All right, now drag him out in the alley.
Vince, can I...
Yeah, okay. Maybe it'll teach him not to get so nosy. But keep that razor in your pocket.
I will, honest. This is gonna be real fun. Come on, Chalmers. Here's where I do some road work on your liver. Here, Mr. Diamond. I only wish my brother could see you.
When I came to, I was curled up around a
round metal object I couldn't see, and I felt as if I was smothered in a mountain of cotton, and getting out of it was like trying to shovel sand with a pitchfork. I finally managed to move and wished I hadn't, for a company of Bengal lancers began target practice in my side. So I quit trying and lay still for a long moment. Then a voice came fizzing through the cotton at me.
Hey, mister, are you alive?
Well, if I'm not, you're an angel, and this is a harp.
Well, I'm sure no angel. And that's the garbage can. So I guess you're not dead.
Matter for debate, Jeannie. Oh, help me up, will you?
Sure. Here. Can you stand?
Practically anything after this. Ooh.
Hey, you're hurt pretty bad. Come on, lean on me. My place isn't far. I'll take you there so you can lie down.
Best offer I've had today. Lead on, Angel.
There. Now, how do you feel?
I never use language like that in front of a lady.
Oh, I'm no lady. I'm a waitress at Pietro's. I heard the noise in the back room. When you didn't come out, I took a look.
Ooh.
Gee, does your head hurt, baby?
Like all my relatives are inside digging for gold. With luck, I can open my eyes and they won't fall out.
You know, we might have had a lot of fun together if you weren't all banged up like this.
I'll take that remark up with you later, honey. I'm not usually the kind of guy who runs out on pretty girls, but I only wanted to get my hands on the gonip who tried to kick my brains out. So I took Jean's number, filed it under for later investigation, and stumbled out into the street. My head was clearing, but it was as slow about it as a dummy doing a strip tease. Maybe that's why I didn't notice when I came out of the house that I had two guys for company.
Hello, Diamond.
Huh?
When Pietro told me Jane had run out, I thought I might find you here. She always goes for guys like you.
Well, she has taste. But I'm glad you came around. I have a few things I want to discuss with you and Joe here.
Hold it, Chalmers. Or I'll show you how easy it is to get rid of your troubles.
Now, that's a pretty little gun. Aren't you stepping out of character, Vince? You're supposed to be a smart one.
You're getting on my nerves.
Yeah? Well, put the gun away and I'll quiet you down a little.
You want me to mess him up again, Vince?
And what's with you? Come to do your job over again?
I may at that.
Yeah? Well, you got 32 teeth, sonny. Want to try for none?
Why, you...
I got some questions I'd still like to have answered. Why was I picked as pigeon? Why me?
You're getting a little too smart, Diamond. Now, listen. I know you got wise to Burton, so it figures that you still got the package. Now, I got no reasons to give you $10,000 worth of diamonds. I want them back.
Oh, dandy. I've got big news for you, Buster. You're not going
to
get them.
Don't make any mistakes, Diamond. I'll use this gun if I have to.
Yeah, go eat a tombstone,
Joe.
Yeah, how's your stomach ache?
Wait a minute, Joe. Ooh. Now, Diamond, look, you can have a choice. You bring the rocks to me at Pietro's in an hour and we'll forget the whole thing. Or don't. And I'll send Joe with a few friends to call on you. And for the last time.
For a few sick minutes, I leaned against the wall, wondering if I wanted to live. One thing I was certain of was that Vince Mayer was never going to get those diamonds back. Or was he? An idea began to percolate in my head to the tune of an old rhyme about a goose and a gander. And I got inspired enough to sit up and forget my aching ribs. When it simmered into a full-scale boil, I grabbed a cab, went back to my office, and got the diamonds out of the milk bottle where I'd hidden them. Then I headed for the village fast. I was soon banging on a door there like a drummer playing Bob.
So I owe you money. Hold your horses.
Well, if it ain't my cripple.
I got the bruises to prove it.
Come on in. Are you really recovered?
What? Oh, no, not that much, Angel.
Then?
I need some answers. What do you know about Vince and Joe?
Not too much. Enough to dislike him plenty. That Vince got me canned for leaving Pietro's to take care of you. That's why I'm back home. I know he's a smoothie, and I think he's a big-time jewel thief.
Now, that much I know. How about Joe, the dog-faced boy?
Him, he's just a punk. I think his real name is Fanci, or Fanchetti. Franchetti, or some such thing.
Franchetti?
Yeah. I don't know why, but they call him Joe the Barber.
Oh, Joe the Barber.
Yeah. Isn't that silly?
If he cuts hair, he doesn't. But I'll lay 8-1, this guy works on throats. Thanks, Angel. You've tied up my 3 points.
What are you talking about?
Your friend Vince Mayer lifted 50 grand in ice from the police commissioner last night, and his accomplice Joe gave the gardener a shave.
You mean murder?
On the button. The gardener's throat was sliced from life to death. And now, baby, look. How would you like to earn $100?
Sure. Is it legal?
Well, no.
I'll take it.
Now, where is he? Will you tell me? Where's Rick?
I know where I'd like him to be.
I'm worried, Otis. Seriously. Rick is in this thing up to his ears.
You mean he was in on that job?
Don't be stupid, Otis. Of course not. Rick's no crook. But he's mixed up in this case some way, and I'm worried. He should have called me by now.
Gee. Hope he hasn't tangled with that razor guy.
I thought you hated Rick.
Oh, you know I was just talking.
I know, I know. What a mess. Rick in danger and I can't find him. The commissioner's spouting lava all over the city hall. Why the devil did it have to be the commissioner's house?
You know, it's kind of funny at that. The commissioner himself.
You knucklehead. For 2 cents, I'd... Maybe that's him. Lieutenant Levinson, homicide.
Walt, Rick.
Rick, I was... Where the devil you been?
Taking care of some arrangements.
Arrangements?
Never mind, just listen. I was picked as a pigeon and some of those diamonds were planted on me this morning.
What?
I've traced your hoods. They're Vince Mayer and Joe the Barber Franchetti. Now, you come to Pietro's in half an hour and you'll catch him with part of the diamonds on him.
Rick, what is this?
Well, Vince had it figured as a double-barrel gag, Walt. First on the cops by raiding the commissioner's house. Second by dumping a few of the rocks in my lap and tipping the police so I'd take the rap.
But why you, Rick?
Well, Joe's name, Franchetti. You remember, I sent his brother Tony to Sing Sing a few years back.
Oh.
I knew he had a brother, but until now, Joe stayed out of Manhattan.
I get it. Okay, what's the play?
Well, I'm going to take the package back to Vince. Give it to him in Pietro's. The girlfriend will be raising so much fuss, no one will notice me. Then as Vince and Joe leave, you nail him with the diamonds. And no alibi for having him.
Right. You said half an hour?
In front of Pietro's.
Take a peek, Angel. Through the window. There's my party at the back table. Now, you know what to do.
Yeah. I keep yelling until you get back to me. Right?
As rain. I'll make it a good one.
I got good lungs.
Let's go in. Okay, over to the bar.
Lock, Rick.
There he is now, Joe. I told you he'd show up. Hello, Diamond. You got something for me?
That's right, Vince.
Okay, let's have it.
Hey, I didn't do nothing.
Hey, what's going on over there?
Stop, stupid dame. Yeah, do you want the package or not?
Oh, yeah, give it to me. Come on, Joe. Let's scram out of here before that dame brings the cops.
Yeah. That's an easy way of getting back the 10 grand, ain't it, Vince?
Shut up. Come on. Take it easy now.
Okay, okay.
We're okay now. Let's split up.
Hold it, Vince.
What?
Let's have a look at the package.
The cops!
Levinson, what are you doing?
The package, Vince.
Hey, what are we gonna do?
Shut up. You, got a warrant, of course.
Of course. Otis, take the package.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
You can't arrest me. I don't even know what's in that package. It was given to me by a friend.
Now, don't use the term so loosely, Vince.
Why, Walt, what are you doing here?
Hello, Rick. I've captured a criminal.
No.
Yes, and he was carrying a package of his loot.
Why, I bet it's part of that diamond robbery.
Hey, what is all this? Diamond, you just planted that package on me.
Me? Why, stranger, you're telling a fib. You just know that's downright immoral to somebody.
This is ridiculous. Lieutenant, he gave me those diamonds and Pietro's not 5 minutes ago. I didn't lift them from the commissioner.
Didn't you, Vince? Why, then I must have made a mistake. You can prove your story, of course.
Sure I can. Bartender saw Diamond slip me the package.
Oh, now, Vince, you think that bartender was going to be watching you when a lovely girl is practically tearing up the joint?
Boss, the dame yelling. She was a plant.
Yeah, but this is a frame-up. Diamond, you can't get away with this.
Please, don't talk to me. I never associate with common criminals.
A frame. You dirty double-crossing copper.
Look out, Rick. He's got a razor.
Mm. Oh, my arm. Now, don't cry, Joe. This is for you. Ooh.
Ooh. Wow. What a punch you got, Shamus.
Well, that does it. Come on, Vince. Otis, load that killer into the car and pick up that razor.
Yellowton.
Want a lift, Rick?
Yeah, no thanks, Walt. I'm going to go home freshen up.
Yeah, you look like you could use it.
I left
Walt and headed for my apartment, where I grabbed a stomach full of vitamins and planted myself under the hot shower. It felt so good I fell asleep. And if Walt hadn't phoned, I'd have probably become the only man in history to drown in the shower. Walt shocked me wide awake with the news that he was holding a $1,000 reward for me. I gave him my nicest thank you and made a mental note to drop by and give half of it to Jean to make up for her losing her job. Around about 8 o'clock, after I'd taken care of dividing the reward, I steered for 975 Park Avenue, made it with no trouble, and rang the bell to Helen's apartment.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Diamond. Miss Asher's expecting you, sir. She's in the library.
Thank you, Francis. How's your health?
My health, sir, is very good, thank you.
Well, now, this may come as a shock, but, Francis, about the money I owe you.
Oh, don't fret about it, sir. We'll tell.
I'm going to pay you what I owe you.
You're going to? Oh, dear. Perhaps I'd better sit down. Oh, my word.
Now, there, Francis.
Rick, darling, is that you?
It ain't Tom Swift, baby.
Come on in the library.
Well, okay. But it'll do you no good, my dove. I'm a cripple, a battle-torn veteran.
I don't want your muscles, Rick. I'm blue, and I want you to sing to me.
Oh, Helen, baby, I don't want to sing. I want to...
Rick, I'm blue. I need cheering up, not be nice and sing.
Well, okay, honey. How's this, huh? I can see, no matter how near you'll be, you'll never belong to me. But I can dream, can't I? Can't I pretend that I'm locked in the bed of your embrace? For dreams are just like wine, and I am drunk with mine. I'm aware my heart is a sad affair. There's much disillusion there, but I can dream, can't I? Can't I adore you? Although we are oceans apart, I can't make you open your heart. But I can dream, can't I? Still feeling blue, baby?
Oh, Ricky, come here.
Here I am. Oh, now I'm contented. You in my arms, my bills paid off, and my bills... Oh, for Pete's sake, I forgot Francis.
Francis? What are you talking about?
Come with me, I'll show you. Now, there he is. Francis, you all right?
Oh, yes, sir. I think so, sir.
Rick, will you tell me what's going on in my own home?
Well, honey, I paid Francis off, and the shock of having to give back my gun and badge undid him.
Oh, well, are you feeling better, Francis?
Not very much, Miss Asher. It's that badge and license.
Will you miss him that much, Francis?
Well, sir, to be very honest, there's a waitress in a tea shop down the street with whom I've been, if you'll pardon the expression, having a fling.
Francis, you?
Oh, that's not the worst, Miss Asher. I'm afraid I've been a bit of a fraud with her as well. In fact, with several of the waitresses there...
Now, wait. Where does my badge and license enter into it? Did you hock them for crumpets?
Oh, much worse, Mr. Diamond. You see, to all the waitresses of Miss Tuppingham's tea shop, I am Richard Diamond, private detective.
You
have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Gene Tatum, William Conrad, Tal Avery, and Bob Carroll. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Tonight's story was written by Herb Purdom and edited and directed by Blake Edwards. See the Richard Diamond picture story in the December issue of Movie Stars Parade. Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective. Listen tonight to NBC for a star lineup of entertainment. Every Saturday on NBC, you can hear such stellar programs as Hollywood Star Theater, Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences, Your Hit Parade, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, The Judy Canova Show, Grand Old Opry, and songs by Morton Downey. There's always a program of interest on NBC, so keep tuned here. Shortcut to Death with Fred McMurray is next on NBC.
Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lyon. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man. With zither music by Anton Kara.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lyon. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie, The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lyon. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lyon had many lives. And I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lyon. Desire to change the habitat of this particular locket from the neck of this particular lady to my own particular itching palm. It was Naples before the war.
Enter. Ah, you kept me impatient for an hour, Mr. Lyon.
I'm sorry, Signor Rubio. I just flew in from London, forgot to move my watch ahead.
It is my knowledge that you have been in Naples for 3 days now. But it does not matter. I am a man with a skill for waiting.
I'm going to be very brief. I won't waste any more of your time, old
man. Bueno. At first, I must tell you that I've made all the arrangements to dispose of the Donaldson Emerald.
Oh, yes?
As soon as we possess it, I will.
There's a small item I forgot to tell you about, Signor Rubio. I have decided to include you out.
I do not think I understand.
To be brief and simple, I've decided to dissolve our partnership, old man.
Oh, you're disposing of me?
Perhaps that's a nicer way of saying it.
I do not prefer to be disposed.
Naturally, you don't, but sometimes we get disposed, whether we like it or not.
Mr. Lyon, we began this enterprise together, and I think we shall finish it together.
You have never been more in error, old man. Now, you must forgive me for running off my...
A moment, Mr. Lyon.
Yes?
You recall Carlos?
I do.
And that young man from Eastbrook, I forget his name.
You mean Mannheimer?
Yes, if it were possible, they would be very sorry they were rude to me.
I'm now the most well-threatened man in Europe, and you have joined an innumerable caravan. Arrivederci.
Don't farewell me yet, Mr. Lyon.
Sorry, but I really must.
Do not force me to shoot you. If you take one more step toward the door, I'll be fired.
Now, don't be a complete fool, old man. If they found a dead man in your room, they'd hang you.
I will be easy with you. Just tell me where Mrs. Donaldson is, and I will forgive you your ungratefulness.
Rubio, I'm on my way out. If you fire that gun, the police will be here before you can get out of the hotel. Buongiorno.
There's a saying in this city, see Naples and die.
It only proves that life is very short and uncertain for us all. Goodbye, old man. Believe me, I am not a professional hero. But I was not at all concerned about Signor Rubio putting a bullet in me, not in his hotel room. I hurried to the pier where the Arcturus was about to dock. She was carrying precious freight, Mrs. Donaldson. I'd already made arrangements with one of the customs officials to hold Mrs. Donaldson up on a pretext of going through her luggage. A few thousand liras did the trick.
Oh, you stubborn man! I tell you, there's nothing contraband in my luggage. You've already gone through my clothes twice with your dirty hands. Amy, talk to this man. He doesn't understand a word of English.
My Italian is worse than his English.
Per increscio tanto, signora, ma è necessario. Ho istruzione di esaminare il vostro bagaglio. Deve aver pazienza.
What seems to be the trouble here?
Thank heavens, an American. I have no idea why this idiotic official is rummaging through my clothes.
That's just a matter of form, you know.
You think I was a smuggler or something. I've been to Naples many times, and there's never been this ridiculous fuss. I'll talk to the American consul. See to it that this man loses his job. I wonder if you could talk to him. That is, if you can speak Italian.
Of course, I'd be only too happy to. Let me see what I can do. Che cosa succede qui?
È di regola di esaminare ogni 25 passeggeri.
Oh, no, questo non è necessario, conosco le signore. Questa è la mia carta.
Ah, signore, mi rincresce tanto di aver dato alla signora tutto questo disturbo.
No, no, veramente. Niente. It's all right now, you're cleared. Here, let me help your bags,
Thank you ever so much. I don't know what I would have done without you. Amy, get one of those porters to help us with the luggage.
Yes, Mrs. Donaldson.
I have my car here. I'd be glad to give you a lift to your hotel.
Oh, I wouldn't want you to bother.
Oh, no bother at all. One fellow American to another, you know.
Thank you. These taxi drivers rob you mercilessly.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. My name is Lyon. Harold Lyon.
I'm Mrs. Frederica Donaldson. I'm so glad we ran into you. A wonderful piece of luck.
Well, let's say we're well met. Loveliness was gracing my car. Loveliness in the form of the emerald locket around Mrs. Donaldson's neck, and loveliness in the form of Amy Collins. She was Mrs. Donaldson's hired companion. She had red hair and eyes to match the emerald, and she liked me. I think she liked me. Every so often I'd catch her eye. And she'd turn away, as if she were guilty of something.
Really, Mr. Lamb, I've never been so humiliated. Just standing there with that man poking away at my underthings, messing up all my clothes. Absolutely no regard for our feelings. Something should be done about this.
He was only following instructions. I don't think he was...
And doing anything he thought, he was just being malicious and perverse. If it weren't for Mr. Lyon, I don't know what would have happened. We're deeply indebted to him.
Oh, you don't owe me anything at all. I did what any other American would have done, Mrs. Donaldson.
I wish we could repay you for your kindness.
Well, you know, I think maybe you can.
Wonderful. Just tell us what it is.
Well, I've got to buy my sister a gift. It's her birthday. I don't know too much about jewelry, so I wonder if... either of you could come along and help me shop.
Of course we can. Amy does most of my shopping for me. She's very good at it.
That's wonderful.
I'm sure she'd be delighted to help you.
Don't you want me to help you get your things unpacked?
I'm already unpacked, thanks to that customs official. No, you go ahead. Just drop me at the hotel.
You don't mind, do you, Miss Collins?
Oh, no, not at all.
Good. It's a relief. Now, I'd like both of you to be my guests at dinner tonight.
That's very kind of you. We'd be delighted.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Mrs. Donaldson. Really, it's my pleasure. We deposited fat Mrs. Donaldson in a room, and then Amy and I went shopping. I took her along to the Corso Vittorio Emanuele, one of Naples' better thoroughfares.
What are you looking for, Mr. Lyon?
Please, call me Harry.
All right.
May I call you Amy?
If you wish.
You don't sound very enthusiastic.
Please call me Amy.
That's much better.
What do you want to buy for your sister?
Some nice jewelry, a necklace or a locket, something like that. Mrs. Donaldson was wearing something pretty, something like that.
You don't know much about jewelry, do you?
Well, I know what I like. Most of the time, the things I like you can find in a dime store.
You won't find Mrs. Donaldson's locket in a dime store. It cost about $20,000.
$20,000? You're kidding.
No, that's a real emerald she has set in the locket.
She must be crazy traveling with a thing like that flashing on her neck, really.
Oh, well, it's not very wise, but she's very sentimental about it. Her husband gave it to her just before he died. She swore to wear it every day of her life. She was very devoted to him.
Well, I suppose you think I'm pretty much of a chump about jewelry.
You have good taste.
I also have good luck meeting you.
Life is very strange, isn't it?
Mm. No, why?
Well, just half an hour ago, you and I were total strangers. Now here I am helping you buy a gift as if we'd known each other for a long time.
Well, there's nothing wrong in that, is
it? No, it's... Just at the moment you entered the scene, things seemed to move fast and efficiently.
You make it sound as if it were a fool.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way.
I can go away and come back again and do it more slowly.
I suppose I sound foolish.
Perhaps it's because you like me too soon.
Well, I...
Well, I liked you too soon.
Well...
That's probably too fast for you, too, but you see, I'm a man who says what's on his mind. Probably not a very efficient way of talking to a gentle soul like you.
Oh, no, I prefer straightforward people.
All right, now, you be straightforward. What was your first reaction to me when you first saw me?
I was interested, perhaps, maybe intrigued.
That's better.
You have a way of condensing relationships quickly.
Well, if people like each other, they don't need a calendar full of time to tell them about it.
Good things grow slowly. Here's a shop.
Hmm. Well, they all look pretty, that filigree pin. I like that. It's very nice.
Which one?
The one near the large cameo.
Oh, yes, it is very pretty. Shall we go in?
Wait, let's look at the other things in the window.
Ah, I'm begging your pardon. I heard you conversing English.
We were talking American, a totally different language.
I'm trying to reach Via Salvatore Rosa. Could you inform me how to get there?
Sure, old man. Turn right at the next corner and go straight for three squares.
Oh, I'm much grateful.
That's right, all right.
Would you like a cigarette?
No, thank you very much. Just turn right at the next corner.
Oh, I'm unhappy to trouble you further, do you have a match?
I'm sorry, but I don't have any matches with me.
I have a light.
Mademoiselle is most generous. A thousand thanks.
Turn right at the next corner.
And three squares
and
down,
three
eh?
Squares down.
Good day to you all.
Good day.
Perhaps you will meet again, eh? Good day.
He seemed most reluctant to leave.
Yeah. An odd fellow.
Why did you refuse to give him a light?
I didn't like his face.
Did you ever see him before?
Why do you ask that?
We acted as if he knew you.
Well, I didn't care to know him.
I think you gave him the wrong direction.
Well, it could be.
It seems that if he followed your directions, he would find himself in the Bay of Naples.
I'm sure it won't dampen his spirits. Should we go in now?
Yes, of course. There's just one thing I'd like to ask
you. I'll answer anything you want.
What do you do for a living?
For a living? Oh, I'm a dealer in objets d'art. I wander through the world collecting the best things.
Sounds very interesting.
Mm, it is. It's often quite exciting. Now, let's go in and buy that filigree pin.
Returns in just a moment as the third man. As Harry Lime, the third man in See Naples and Live.
I bought a pin for 2,500 lira on the way back to Amy's hotel. She was thoughtful and not much inclined to do any talking. I took her by the hands. She didn't object to that, but She didn't react to the touch. Put it simply, she just let me hold her hand, nothing more. I suspected that Signor Rubio had made too strong an impression. It's essential now that I work fast. The emerald would have to be in my pocket tonight or not at all. However, I wasn't worried about Rubio. Strangely enough, it was Amy. Bothered me. I was beginning to be a little too fond of her. That was bad. I always make it a point not to be too fond of anyone in this world.
This is a lovely romantic restaurant.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
How did you discover it, Mr. Lyon?
I just asked the porter in the hotel. I know everything in Italy. The portier is the best informed people in the country.
It's really delightful.
Oh, good.
Don't you think so, Amy?
I do. It's charming.
Won't you have some more spumante?
Well, just a drop. I declare, just like champagne.
Yes, it's the Italian version.
It's so kind of you to give so much time to us, Mr. Lyon. Really, it is. Amy, isn't Mr. Lyon just a dear?
I think you're most generous.
Oh, I'm having such a delicious time. I feel so happy. Happier than I've been since... I wish poor Benjamin were here with us. You would have liked him, Mr. Lyon.
Oh, I'm sure I would.
Poor Benjamin.
No, Mrs. Donaldson, let's not be sad here. Just have a little more spumante.
Oh, I really don't think we should. I'm afraid you're going to make us all drunk, Mr. Lyon.
Oh, Amy, I don't think another drop will hurt us. After all...
This time, Mrs. Donaldson is becoming thoroughly relaxed. Spumante is a fine relaxer. I stirred the champagne with a wooden swizzle stick, the bottom of which was well laced with phenobarbital. My keynote for the evening, as you can see, was relaxation. Before the evening was over, my emeralded guest was going to be the most relaxed woman in all Italy. The spumante bubbled and frothed over as I stirred it.
I know I shouldn't have another glass,
but perhaps you had better stop, Mrs. Donaldson.
Never. I just feel so wonderful.
How about you, Amy?
All right.
A toast to us. May we always be as happy as we are now.
A toast to you, Mr. Lyon. You wonderful, wonderful man.
I patted her neck. I wanted her to get used to the touch of my hand against her neck. She withdrew a little. Then I could become super sensitive about the locket. We drank. I studied the clasp on the lock. It was a simple device. You turned a tiny wheel, and it released the catch. Just a twist of the wrist.
The musicians are going to play again.
Come here.
Please, Mr. Lyon, no more spumante.
No, I have a special surprise.
Yes, Signore.
Have the musicians come over here.
Yes, Signore.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
That's a lovely gesture, Harry.
I thought you'd forgotten my first name.
Here they are, Signore. What would you like them to play?
What would you like, Mrs. Donaldson?
Oh, I can't think of a thing.
How about some Neapolitan songs?
Per favore, a monastero Santa Chiara. Canta per noi. It was going to be very easy. They were completely at ease, and they trusted me. Amy stole her hand at the mine as they played. It was really quite pleasant. I leaned back and relaxed.
That was just beautiful.
Very good. Thank you. Molto grazie. Here's something for the lads.
Oh, grazie, signor.
Did you enjoy it, Mrs. Donaldson?
They played divine.
I have a wonderful idea. How would you all like to go for a drive to Pompeii?
At this hour?
Yeah, it's only 10 o'clock. It's a full moon. Quite a thrill.
I'd adore to go. Fascinating place. I've been there many times.
Well, you have to see it at night.
Isn't it closed?
Of course it is. We can go in through the back way near the arena.
Oh, I'm willing if Mrs. Donaldson is. Try and stop me. What a marvelous idea.
Just one thing.
What is it?
Amy told me about your emerald locket. I think it'd be safer if you left it at your hotel. In the safe of your hotel.
Don't you worry about it. I never take it off.
No, but really.
Except when I retire. Don't worry about it. It's perfectly safe. Besides, we wouldn't find any criminals in Pompeii.
No, I'm sure not. But all the same, I'd feel better if you left the
locket. Oh, no, I can't do that. Please don't fret about it.
All right, if you're sure.
Let's go right now.
Just let me pay the bill. Camiere?
Yes, signore.
Il conto, per favore. Check.
Sì, signore.
It was less than an hour's ride to the ancient, extinct city of Pompeii, lying like a corpse at the foot of its killer, Vesuvius. We entered through the gardens of an ancient home. The moon shone down hard and white, lighting up the empty city.
Isn't it thrilling and beautiful and frightening?
chap by the name of Trebio Valenti used to live here. He hasn't been home for nearly 2,000 years. Here we are in Abbondanza Street. It's in perfect condition.
Isn't it exciting?
It's unbelievable.
Now look at the gutter. You can see where the chariot wheels made deep ruts in the stone.
What a narrow street.
We can walk in the gutter. I don't think we'll be run over by any chariots tonight.
Where does this street lead to?
To the Forum.
What about those lovely buildings?
Oh, they're old mansions. Belong to a couple of rich fellows. See the sign on the wall?
What does it say?
Post no bills. In Latin.
And the sign alongside of it?
Down with such and such a tyrant. Time has worn away the name.
It's just amazing. It all begins to make me feel safe.
Now, don't you feel well, Mrs. Donaldson?
I feel fine. Just sleepy. I don't know why I should feel sleepy when I'm so excited.
Don't you want to sit down?
Maybe I'd better.
We'll just rest for a moment.
I think we'd better go back.
We will, but first we'll let Mrs. Donaldson catch a few minutes' rest. There's a marble bench in the atrium of the Casa di Ceriali. He used to be an arrogant rich man who didn't like the strangers visiting his palatial home, but I don't think you mind now.
Oh, it's lovely in
here. Here we are. You sit down, Mrs. Donaldson, and rest your shoulder against mine. There you are.
You're darling, Mr. Lyme.
Amy, if you walk into the other room to your right, you'll see some excellent frescoes. They're beautifully preserved.
May I have the flashlight?
Yes, here. Mrs. Donaldson was sleeping softly. I pressed my fingers against her neck to test her responses. There was no reaction. Tried it again so that even in her sleep she would feel no alarm, become accustomed to the feel of fingers around her throat. She slept peacefully on. I quickly unloosed the catch in her slow care, not to slide the locket, picked it gently off her neck. At the same time, I held her hand to divert her sensation of touch. It was done quickly. I was ready to make my silent departure, gently propped her against a pillow. Then I heard a sound that froze me. Footsteps. Footsteps, and they weren't Amy's. Who's there?
What's the matter?
I caught a glimpse of him. It was one of the guards. There's only one thing to do. Run. Stara Stabioni, I turned the corner and ran into one of the old Roman baths. I made for one of the rooms, expecting it to have another exit. It was dark, and I fumbled around. I had a very unpleasant feeling when I became aware that the only way out was the way I came in. I reined back. It's too late. My pursuer was standing at the entrance with a flashlight in one hand and a gun in the other. It was not a guard. It was Rubio.
You see, Harry, fate has thrown us together again.
It's still around her neck.
The locket, please.
I just told you
it's I'm not in my hotel now. This time I will kill you. Give me the locket.
I'm not a usually reckless fellow, but this time I did a very rash thing. I rushed him. He fired. The bullet tore a hole in my shoulder, barely touching my skin. I wrestled with him. He fell on the marble floor. His wiring very strong. In a few seconds, it was clear that he was in far better shape than I. Then he hit me a very rude blow on the head with a gun. And I abandoned the fight. For a moment, I just lay there thinking. Thinking what a very evil moment of my life this was.
Now, the locket.
Okay.
Thank you. And now I think I will dispose of you for having caused me all this trouble.
Halt! Al momento! Cerca il revolver, signore, altrimenti tiro.
That's the police, Ruby, old man. You're caught.
Al momento.
Caught red-handed.
Come here. But the emerald...
It doesn't belong to you, old man. Better go along quietly with the police.
God,
look, there's some more of them coming through the door. No use putting up a fight. Remember what I've always told you, old man. Crime doesn't pay.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Lyme. Risking your life to save my locket.
Oh, that's all right.
You're the most brave man to chase after him in the dark, unarmed.
I just gone to see where Amy was, and I heard the sound. There he was, deftly removing the locket from your neck.
I felt someone tottering around my neck, but I thought it was you.
Oh, really?
I was asleep, you know.
Yeah. Now, I had my suspicions about this Rubio from the first.
Does the wound hurt much?
Oh, it's nothing. Just a hole in my suit.
And a bird bump on your head, you poor boy.
Mm-hmm. It'll heal.
Amy, you haven't said a word to our hero since they arrested that Rubio man.
I'm just stunned.
Oh, I'm sorry we got you into this. I never should have taken you to Pompeii. It's all my fault.
Of course not. That terrible man would have tried to snatch the locket wherever I was. Just a lucky thing I met up with you. I'm going to give you a gift. You just must take it. £100 note.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it.
You'd make me very happy if you took it.
Oh, no, I absolutely
couldn't. Please, Mr. Lyme, please.
Well, if it means so much to you, I'll give
it
to my favorite charity. Well, here we are at the hotel, safe and sound.
Thanks to you. I must run upstairs. The whole thing has given me a severe headache. You will call me in the morning, won't you, Mr. Lyme?
Indeed, I will, Mrs. Donaldson.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, Amy, can I have a word with you?
I'll be up in a moment, Mrs. Donaldson.
Of course, dear. Good night again. And bless you, Mr. Lyme.
I'm sorry about this evening, Amy.
So am I.
Let's meet for lunch tomorrow.
No, Harry.
Why not?
I never saw the frescoes on the wall.
You didn't?
No, I didn't find them, and I walked all the way around. I saw you from the front entrance.
Oh.
Besides, a man who deals in fine arts would know an emerald locket from a dime store trinket.
Yes. Should have thought of that.
I was beginning to like you very much, Harry.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not the kind of man you'd like to begin to like a little more.
It's a pity.
You want to see me again, ever?
It'll never be any good.
Well, you might as well have the filigree pin.
What about your sister?
I haven't spoken to my sister in 10 years. She doesn't approve of me, suppose. Supposing I give it to you?
No, thanks.
You mean you wouldn't take it?
No, I couldn't.
Well, supposing if you didn't take it, I just threw it away.
Oh, but you shouldn't do that.
Oh, I won't. I won't. We were just supposing. Now, goodbye, Amy. There's no supposing about that, I suppose.
Harry Lyme returns in just a moment. Official with champagne and the gold filigree pin. The reward left me with a profit of $270-odd plus a bump on the head and a hole in my suit. I'd lost the lovely green emerald and the lovely green eyes of Amy. The emerald didn't bother me too much, but Amy. Amy. She nearly interfered with the great romance of my life. My love for Harry Lyme. Thank you.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Coming.
Mr. Templer.
Yes?
Let me in quickly.
All right.
My name is Claire Gordon.
Well, I can recommend that chair.
I don't have time, Mr. Templer. I want to confess.
Confess what?
Murder.
Well, maybe I'd better take the chair. You're quite serious?
Well, of course I am. Will anyone confess to murder merely as a joke?
It might depend on their sense of humor. However, whom did you murder?
My husband.
I see.
You don't believe me.
I have no reason to believe or disbelieve.
But I did kill him.
All right.
You ought to do something about it.
Mrs. Gordon, I can think of many reasons why a woman might want to kill her husband. In some instances, she actually does. But I can think of no reason why she should come to me and tell me about it.
Well, I had to confess to somebody.
Well, you could have chosen the police.
Oh, they're so vulgar.
Murder is not a monopoly of the upper classes, nor is it in itself an especially refined activity.
You don't understand. Before I married Jim, I was Claire Wheelock.
Of the something or other Wheelocks, no doubt. Still, I
absolutely refused to go to some pokey, dirty little police station.
Some of them are quite large, and I understand clean from time to time.
Tell some grubby little man all about my personal affairs.
Murder, according to the statutes, is a public affair.
I think you're nasty.
I'm only trying to be reasonable, after
all.
I've
heard you weren't always reasonable when beautiful women were concerned.
Oh, that's true only on Shrove Tuesday.
Oh, I despise you.
Hey, wait, maybe today is Shrove. Oh, no, it's Sunday. Hey, she could be coming back to make an appointment for Shrove Tuesday. No.
You're Simon Templer?
I'm afraid I am. You seem to object.
Why was my wife here?
Your what?
Wife. And don't try telling me you didn't know she was married, you low individual.
I think you'd better tell me about myself inside, huh? Now then, you are...
James Gordon, and my wife was just here.
How do you know?
I saw her leave. Are you going to try denying it?
Well, not if you saw her just leave.
Oh, that's good. Now, if you don't mind, I'll take my coat off.
You're warm?
I'm about to beat your brains out, you know.
Watch your language. And why do you think your wife was here?
Pretty obvious, isn't it?
I don't know. After all, I never met your wife before. Furthermore, Mr. Gordon, you're dead.
Are you being whimsical?
I'm only trying not to make a liar out of your wife.
She told you she was a widow?
More or less. Actually, she came here to confess.
Are you trying to pull my leg?
I've always thought that a highly overrated indoor sport, except, of course, in the right company.
She came here to confess to what?
To murdering you.
To what?
Apparently, her confession was premature. If, that is, you really are James Gordon.
Well, thanks for the premature. And of course I'm James Gordon. Who else would I be?
Shall I guess?
No. No, you can take a look at my wallet.
Oh, thank you. Driver's license. Blue Shield medical plan card, dated. Oddly enough, only a week ago.
Well, what's odd about that?
Apparently you don't expect to die. You are James Gordon.
Well, thank you. Now, would you like to tell me why my wife was here?
She came to confess to your murder.
You know, Mr. Templer, I think I'm beginning to believe you.
Fine. Keep working at it.
Claire is eccentric. If you say she told you she'd murder me, well, she must have told you.
She did.
But why? I'm not dead.
Therefore, she didn't murder you.
Then why did she make such an idiotic confession?
Wishful thinking, perhaps.
No, just a minute.
Or perhaps it was only anticipation. Oh, excuse me. Hello?
Mr. Templer.
Louis.
A half an hour ago you called for a cab. A half an hour ago I arrived. A half an hour ago I was still warm. I am now understudying an icicle.
Oh, Louis, I'm sorry. Come upstairs and thaw out. I have had company.
A blonde?
To start with.
What are you up to now?
Her husband.
I'll come up. I'll bring a large wrench, too.
Oh, that won't be necessary, Louis. Bye.
Mr. Temple, what you said just before, you mean perhaps she intends to murder me. But Why should she want to?
She came to confess, not to confide in me.
I better run along. Get hold of Claire and I... Well, I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. Templer.
Oh, it's all right.
Thanks for your patience.
Forget it.
Goodbye.
Bye. Well, so much... That's right, Sergeant. Man named Gordon, shot to death on my doorstep. No, Sergeant, I never shoot anyone on my doorstep. It's untidy. I don't know, Look, Sergeant, I have an idea. Why not drop in and see for yourself, hmm? Sergeant was quick. Come in.
Hi, Mr. Templer.
Oh, Louis, I forgot you were coming up. You warmer?
Yeah, a little bit, thanks. Friend of yours?
Who?
The gentleman who's laying down dead outside your door.
No, we'd barely met.
Oh, well, that's nice. You ready to leave now?
I'm afraid not. I have to wait for the police.
That's too bad. You know, the guy might be a conservative dresser, but I don't think he does credit to your doorstep.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. His name is James Gordon of the, Gordon.
Oh, well, that's different, yeah. Did he kill himself, or did somebody help him?
I don't think he killed himself, Louis.
Why?
Well, he'd just taken out a Blue Shield card.
Oh, planning for the future, huh?
Yes, it also means he expected to have a future. Louis, while we're waiting, would you look up James Gordon in the phone book?
Okay. But I could tell you now he won't answer the phone.
I want his address.
But he's moving. It's going to be the morgue.
But his wife will still be there.
Oh. Well, here it is. 12 Seven Oaks Drive. Yeah, it's a very high-class neighborhood.
A very high-class wife.
Maybe I ought to run home and put on my white tie.
Don't be silly, Louis. Under the circumstances, the tie should very definitely be black.
You know, those cops were very nice.
So they were.
In spite of what you asked them?
What do you mean?
You asked them if somebody confessed to murdering James Gordon.
So I did?
Yes, so don't you think it's a little early for a confession?
Louis, you don't understand. You see, in this particular case, the confession was made before the murder.
Oh, well, that explains it. That explains nothing.
Louis, Mrs. What? Gordon visited me just before Mr. Gordon did.
Uh-huh.
No.
No?
No. What she did do was confess to murdering her husband.
Yeah, but he was still alive.
That's right.
Maybe she's got clairvoyance or something. Oh, whoop. 12 Seven Oaks Drive, Mr. Thumper.
Good.
Yeah. Should I wait?
You'd better come with me.
Okay. Except, but why?
Well, I have a feeling I'll need a witness.
Oh, so you really don't know Mrs. Gordon very well.
Well, if her confession was true, I don't want to know her at all.
But it couldn't have been, huh? Except maybe it was, huh?
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
Sure. And that's a way nobody understands, too, me included.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Boy, is he half wrong.
Good evening. We should like to see Mrs. Gordon.
Come in, please. Whom shall I say is calling?
Who?
I beg your pardon.
Who shall I say is calling? Better grammar.
Listen, bud, for what I drag down here, whom is good enough?
Oh? Oh, the Gordons don't pay well?
If you are referring to recent history, the Gordons don't pay, period.
Oh, they're having financial difficulties, huh?
No, they ain't having no difficulties on account they ain't got no finances.
Explains the hospital plan, and you'd better slip your English accent on and announce this. I'm Simon Templer, this is Louis.
Yeah, hi.
Very good.
Since when has Brooklyn grown butlers?
Louis, the Gordons have been in trouble.
Mr. Gordon ain't, not anymore. About Mrs. Gordon...
Mrs. Gordon will see you this way.
Oh, thank you.
Not only will she see you, but you'll see her. Looking at it objective, you're getting the break. She is quite a dish.
Sir, you are speaking of the woman Mr. Gordon loves.
Who says? That's the door. She's on the other side.
Hey, 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 hey. You might open it for us.
What's the matter? You broke an arm or something?
If he ain't careful, they're going to send him back to Brooklyn.
Shh. Mrs. Gordon?
Yes?
Of course, it's been a little while since we last met, but...
Since we what?
Met.
Oh, we haven't met.
We haven't?
If we had, surely I'd remember, Mr. Templer, I believe my butler said.
We met at my home within the last hour.
Oh, well, I'm sure you have a very charming home, but I was never in it.
Well, I may be able to refresh your memory if you'll be patient with me. You came in order to confess.
Confess? What?
The murder of your husband.
Mr. Templar, if this is some kind of joke...
I'm not joking.
Then it's not in the best of taste. Aside from everything else, my husband happens to be alive and in splendid health. So you see, I couldn't very well have confessed to any such silly thing.
Mrs. Gordon.
Yes?
Your husband's health is no longer what it used to be. He's dead.
Dead? Jim?
Yes, Mrs. Gordon.
Oh, no. No!
Mr. Temple, she's going to faint.
Let her.
She did faint. Mr. Templar, King Arthur would never have let you sit down at his round table.
I couldn't afford to be chivalrous, Louis. I had to make sure her faint was genuine.
Oh, you thought she might be putting on an act?
Yes. However, from the way she fell...
Oh, it wasn't no act, huh?
No.
Could that mean that the rest of her story about never being in your apartment or confessing that that's also true?
Hardly.
Well, then maybe she's a twin.
No.
Oh, why not?
Too easy. Come on, help me put her on the couch.
Yeah. You think maybe she's just plain nuts?
Perhaps. Or perhaps, and I quote a playwright of some insight, there's a method in her madness. Yeah, she's coming, too. The butler can look after her. Come on along.
Louis. Okay.
Think you guys can find the front door?
Oh, yes. We brought our compass.
How was Mrs. Gordon?
She was fine. I don't think she's doing quite so well now. You might look in on her.
It'll be a pleasure. Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was a nice visit. Of course, our hostess happened to faint, but where are we going now? Maybe we could make somebody else faint.
Right? No, your cab, first of all. And then...
Yeah?
We wait.
For what? Santa Claus? Mr. Templar, he was here recently.
Not Santa Claus, Louis. We're waiting for Mrs. Gordon to recover.
Oh, that's considerate of us.
Not really. It's nasty of us.
Oh, it is, huh? We're going to hate ourselves in the morning?
Well, that will depend on where Mrs. Gordon leads us tonight.
Well, she ain't in no hurry. We've been waiting 10 minutes already.
Oh, give her time, Louis. She had to recover from a faint, make a phone call, dress for the street.
Yeah, maybe, but I get nervous.
Yeah, you probably need a tonic, had a call.
Mm. Yeah, that reminds me. I had a call up in the Bronx once.
Oh.
Sorry. A redhead comes out of the house 15 minutes after I start honking the horn. Has me drive her to Grand Central. I ask her why the delay. She says she was very busy murdering her husband, and I laugh like anything. But you know what?
She had murdered her husband.
That's the last time I'll tell you a story. I was supposed to say that.
I'm sorry. Hey, Lily.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, down the block. Mrs. Gordon, huh?
Mrs. Gordon.
Yeah. It's a nice car she got.
Yeah, give her a chance to get into it.
Oh, yeah, I always forget. Well, she's in now.
Yeah, wait a minute. Give her time, Louis. She has to straighten her hat, do her lips, put on her gloves, signal for a right turn, and then...
Yeah, and then pull away from the curb and then turn left.
Right. Come on, let's go, Louis.
All right. Hey, Mr. Templar. You think maybe she's leaving for parts unknown, like that redhead?
I doubt it. It would amount to a second confession, and one that would be believed.
Yeah. For a woman who just fainted, she's driving plenty fast.
True. You see, Louis, no one dawdles in the shadow of the gallows.
Hey! She's pulling up in front of that park entrance.
We better stop here.
Out, huh?
Out.
She's heading into the park. We follow her, huh?
Yes. Strange.
Maybe she's just a nature lover, Mr. Templar.
At this hour of the night?
Well, as the law says, you gotta love nature only in the daytime.
It isn't love which brings her here. Careful, Louis, she's stopping.
Yeah. Near the lake. Hey... There was a guy waiting for her.
There's no way we can get any closer. She might spot us on the path.
How about getting in amongst the trees?
That's an idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except how good is it? They ran out of trees just here.
Not close enough to see him, but at least we've just met another figure in the case.
I'll stick to Mrs. Gordon's. Mm-hmm. That is, we can't see him. We haven't been introduced to him.
We have to do something about that.
Hey, Mrs. Gordon is scrambling.
Coming back along the path. We stay where we are.
Look, she's almost running.
Yes, probably on very good advice.
Huh?
She has to be on time for her appointment with the police. They might not approve of her having gone for a midnight stroll in the park on the night her husband died. Yeah, she's gone.
Yeah, but the guy is still there. Mm-hmm. We're interested in him now?
Mm-hmm. Very much interested. He'll have to come back this way. We can cut him off. Got to find out who he is. Hey, Louis.
Hmm?
Got a handkerchief?
Why, you want to blow my nose?
No. No. Huh? Do as I'm doing.
Hmm? Oh, make like a masked bandit or something.
That's the general idea. Hurry, Louis.
Yeah. Okay. I do. I'm now a masked bandit, but I ain't happy.
I don't have a gun, but perhaps it'll work anyway.
What, the gun you don't have?
Yes, I'll double up my right hand in my coat pocket.
Here he comes.
Okay, stop right there, bud.
What?
Get behind him, Lefty.
I ain't left-handed. Oh, yeah, I'm behind him, Mixie.
What is this?
Stick up. What do you think it is?
You can't do this.
Sure we can. Or maybe you like to argue so much you would prefer being ventilated.
Being what?
Shut.
Look, you don't have to shoot me.
More of your lip and I'll enjoy it. Shut up. Hand over your poker.
Hand over my what?
Boy, are you ignorant. The money bag, mister, the wallet.
Oh, here, here.
Thanks. Now, keep walking the way you were, see? And don't try looking around. I ain't got no objections at all to shooting a guy in the back.
I won't look around. I won't.
Well, he's gone.
Mm-hmm. So he is.
Now, we ought to scram too, Mr. Temple. If he yells for cops...
I don't think he will. He might have to explain what he was doing in the park at this time of night.
He'd have an easier job than we would.
Let's see. His name is Timothy Kerrigan. Papers in his wallet. Member of the Bar Association. A lawyer, Louis.
Oh, fine. He'll probably sue us for nothing.
A lawyer? Most probably the lawyer for the Gordons.
Well, that would explain why Mrs. Gordon yelled for him, but why would they have to meet in the park?
I don't know, Louis, except that anywhere else they might have been seen together and overheard.
And that would be bad?
It might be murder.
Well, here's your house, Mr. Templer.
Yes, Louis.
Going to go to sleep?
I imagine so. Nothing to be done tonight, so far as I know.
Yeah. Well, anyways, now we got three suspects instead of two.
Three?
Yeah, Mrs. Gordon, Kerrigan, and the butler.
The butler is never guilty, Louis. Hey, how about coming up for a drink?
What was that you said?
Come on, let's go.
Hey, Mr. Templer.
Hmm?
About butlers. Maybe this one ain't guilty, but sometimes one could be, huh?
That's true, but the one we met tonight is too charming a character.
Yeah, don't look now, Mr. Templer.
Keep walking.
But your charming character is carrying around a young cannon.
Good evening. How's butling these nights, huh?
Go on. Inside the apartment.
Oh, with pleasure.
Now, hold it. Nobody move till I put the light on. Okay. All the way in. Now, sit down.
Both of you.
Courtesy?
No, you can't jump me easy sitting down.
Intelligence. We, sit. As for you, you're either an idiot or, in love.
It's the same thing.
I didn't come here to make conversation with you, Templar.
Why did you come?
To make sure you forgot about Mrs. Gordon's confession.
An idiot in love.
That's got nothing to do with you.
Suppose I refuse to forget Mrs. Gordon's confession.
You'll forget it, either by agreeing to or by being dead.
You want me to promise to say nothing of the confession to the police?
That's right.
Well, suppose I do promise, and then you leave, and then suppose I don't keep that promise.
No, no, why do you have to bring that up?
I come back.
And kill me then? Huh. What good would that do, Mrs. Gordon?
All right, if what you're getting is it that the only way I can be sure is by killing you, then I'll...
How much was Mr. Gordon's life insured for?
$100,000. Wait, how did you know?
There had to be a motive for his death. A motive that would place Mrs. Gordon in danger of being considered likely to have murdered her husband. The Gordons had no money. Insurance was the most probable motive in existence. Kerrigan handled the Gordons' finances?
Yeah.
Mrs. Gordon is in love with Kerrigan, isn't she?
No.
I think, yes.
Who cares what you think?
All right. Let's find out how innocent Mrs. Gordon is. Look, pull the window shade down, Front window. Pull an armchair over to the window and sit in it.
Why?
You'll then be silhouetted prettily for the benefit of anyone outside in the street. The drawn shade will make it impossible for you to be identified exactly. Your build is much the same as mine. You will therefore appear to be me to anyone outside. You will also provide a perfect target.
To who?
To the only one who would have any reason for wishing me dead. The murderer of James Gordon. You love Mrs. Gordon. You're convinced she's innocent. She's been here before and she'll be able to find her way back. Well, will you sit in that chair? By this time, the police would long have reached Mrs. Gordon. They're probably finished with their preliminary questioning. She could plead sleepiness. They'll have left the Gordon home, allowing 15 minutes to get here. She should be arriving at almost any moment.
Shut up.
Well, naturally, you're not worried. Perfect target, though you make.
Yeah, and besides, Mr. Templer, even if she does shoot him, he'll be killed by the woman he loves. What more could a guy want?
I told you to...
Yes, you were saying?
That car.
Yes, I heard it.
It doesn't have to be her.
But I'm sure it is. High heels. Well, Mr. Butler?
I'm getting out of here.
He dives very nice.
And in time. I wonder, with no ready-made target for her, what will Mrs. Gordon do? You better get in the next room, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, Louis,
hmm?
Will you open the door?
Oh, I don't mind if you do. I wouldn't like to get shot on your doorstep. It's no way to appreciate your hospitality.
I get it. Hello, Mrs. Gordon.
Well, you're not alone.
No, that's Louis, remember? Better remember inside,
All right. Send him away.
Well, I promised him a drink. He hasn't had it yet. I can't send him away.
But what I have to tell you is confidential.
Louis is in my confidence.
Well, all right. It might turn out more convenient if you're difficult.
About what?
Forgetting that I was ever here before. Forgetting I came to you with a confession of murder.
Sorry, but I have a remarkably retentive memory. For example, I remember a girl I used to go to school
with. You'd better forget her for the moment.
Oh, I couldn't. I loved her very deeply.
How would you feel about... $25,000.
Oh, I'd love them very deeply, too. They're being offered to me for a promise to forget?
Yes.
And if I don't keep it?
You'll sign a paper admitting your promise and acceptance of the money. That would make you an accessory. You wouldn't dare change your mind.
Hey, she's smarter than
me. Be still, darling. Mrs. Gordon, you're young, you're beautiful, and $25,000 is very attractive. Nevertheless, I shall refuse all of you.
Even if...
Yes, I wondered how long it would be before you produced that. The revolver you killed your husband with?
I didn't.
You could convince me in a lot better way.
Can I convince you?
Oh, yes. Your confession helps.
It does.
Of course. Your husband's death makes you richer by $100,000, doesn't it?
Yes.
Otherwise, you had nothing.
Well, our investments, they were unfortunate.
Mr. Kerrigan handled them?
Yes, he's our lawyer.
So your husband handed over his money to Kerrigan... Did he also know he was handing over his wife as well?
What did you say?
I meant his life, of course. A natural slip of the tongue, you know.
You still haven't told me how my confession was going to help me.
I didn't say it would help you. I said it would help convince me you hadn't killed your husband.
Well, that's the same thing.
Not quite.
Mr. Templer, that was the back door.
Yeah, I know. I was saying, yes... The fact that you didn't kill your husband is actually of minor importance in view of... Now would be a good time to borrow your gun. Louis, will you keep Mrs. Gordon company while I see what the boys in the back room are doing?
You're all right, Mr. Temple.
It was Kerrigan.
Uh-huh. I thought it would be.
He didn't see me. Came into the room, headed for the door to the living room. He sneaked it open a bit when I...
Is he alive?
Yeah, I just got him on the shoulder. He was working in the back while she was...
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Louis.
What, Mr. Templer?
Will you phone the police? They've one wounded murderer to collect, one beautiful accessory before and after the fact.
Oh, no, no.
But of the highest class. Her butler will help her wait. More soda, Louis?
No, no, no. What are you trying to do, drown me?
Here you are, Louis.
Oh, thanks a lot. Oh. Hey, Mr. Templer, look. I know Kerrigan shot Mr. Gordon on account of he and Mrs. Gordon were like that. This is a new phrase.
It'll catch on, Louis, believe
me. Yeah, also because they needed the insurance, though, to live happy ever after on, being the high-class types. But why did Mrs. Gordon confess to you before her husband got killed?
Oh, it was an attempt to establish an alibi for herself, Louis. She expected that I'd immediately phone the police or else take her back to her home to view the corpse. In the meanwhile, Kerrigan would murder Gordon. And that would have left Mrs. Gordon in the clear.
Yeah, but you didn't do either of those things. Why?
I didn't believe her.
Oh.
She had really killed her husband and was willing to take whatever consequences there might be. Why come to me?
Uh-huh. So that loused up her alibi. Especially because her husband, instead of staying home and getting shot, had become suspicious of her and he trailed her here.
And was in turn trailed by Kerrigan, who saw a natty opportunity for double-crossing Mrs. Gordon and keeping the money for himself. He handled the Gordons' affairs and had the power of attorney.
Yeah, yeah, but look, Mrs. Gordon's faint when you told her about her husband's death, you know, that was real. You pointed that out yourself.
Of course it was, Louis. But she didn't faint at the news of her husband's death as such. The reason she fainted was because she realized that she'd confessed to me and that her husband had been shot at a time for which she had no alibi.
Uh-huh. Well, now I'm almost smart. Now I can enjoy my drink. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, you know that lovesick butler tells me he's going back to Brooklyn on account of life in the upper classes is too low for his tastes.
Oh, poor fellow. He loved not wisely, but too well. On the other hand, what's wrong with Brooklyn?
You have been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in our cast you heard Joan Banks as Claire and Peter Leeds as her husband. High Averback was the butler, and Jim Nusser, Kerrigan. Larry Dobkin plays Louis. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
This adventure of The Saint was written by Louis Vittes. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Saphir production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that The Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Well, it's Sunday again. That means another gala broadcast of NBC's Big Show. This evening, hostess Tallulah Bankhead has a whole flock of guest stars, including Marlena Dietrich. And when the two glamour gals, Tallulah and Marlena, get together, look out for flying sparks. For drama this Sunday evening, Theater Guild on the Air presents the tense story, The Third Man, starring Joseph Cotten and Sing Nihasso. Join Tallulah and her big show with Marlena Dietrich later on NBC. Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Who?
Oh, yeah, hello, Doc, how are you?
What?
In trouble, you?
More trouble, you attract trouble, Archie, hang up.
It's our dentist, Dr. Thrummig.
Let him wait. We never can find him when we need him. Tell him it's after office hours.
Doc, you're talking so fast I can't make head nor tails of it. Look, listen, Doc. Come on over here and we'll be able to hear you. It'll only take you a few minutes. Right.
You consistently disobey me. I want to work on my paper about odontocosms.
Doc Thrummick has a friend who's in some trouble and he needs our advice. Besides, we owe Doc a fair-sized little bill, remember?
Money again, Archie. Money is the curse of our times.
Yeah, man. Bring on all the curses that is available.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-born mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
This story is one we referred to as the case of the Midnight Ride. Oh, yeah, there was a ride, all right. But it would never have happened if we hadn't received another phone call a few minutes after our Dr. Thrummig phone. It was late in the evening, and Nero Wolfe was studying his paper on orchids while I was absorbed in playing some phonograph records.
Archie, not so loud. I can't possibly think when you play that infernal thing at such volume.
Oh, is that you said, boss?
I said I can't understand why you can't get music from a phonograph without vibrating the top of the instrument.
That's right.
I can't understand why the neighbors haven't called the police. Do you hear that? Archie!
All right, I'll answer it.
You're fired.
Naturally. Hello?
Hello. Is this Archie Goodwin?
No, Mr. Wolf's... What? Me?
Archie.
Yeah, who is it?
I need help, Archie. Please. Come at once. Please. Oh, please. You and Nero.
Who is this?
This is Gloria... No, don't.
Gloria who?
Ronaldo... West...
Hello? Hello? Well, did you hear that?
Another female bar. What happened?
Boss, who do you know named Gloria?
Gloria? I know nothing about anyone named Gloria.
She said her name was Gloria something. I couldn't quite get the last name. But she did say Ronaldo Road.
Well, it's quite possible that she resides on Ronaldo Road.
First she asked if this was Archie Goodwin speaking, and before I had a chance to say anything, she asked me to come to her at once. She needed help. And for you to bring me along. I mean, for me to bring Nero along.
You don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, she said she was Gloria... Bar or Mar or something like that, and then she said Ronaldo Road West, and then the scream, and that's all there was.
The usual pattern of your experience with women.
Sounded like a hand was slapped over her mouth, or she was grabbed by the throat. Bring Nero with you.
I am taking no more assignments this week.
Ronaldo Road West, where is it?
I don't believe there is a Ronaldo Road West. If I remember correctly, Ronaldo Road runs north and south and is approximately 12 miles long.
But she said west.
What she probably tried to say when she was interrupted was Ronaldo Road West Chester.
Westchester, of course.
Asked Inspector Kramer to try to check on that phone call.
I'll ask him to try.
By the way, do you expect to find this Gloria alive, Archie?
I certainly hope so.
And are you aware that if someone strangled her... Then they must have heard her speak your name?
Yes, and yours, too. Shall I open it, boss?
Why not? Let us face it, Archie. Huh?
It's me, Archie.
Wait till I slide the night chain off, Dr. Thrummig.
My nose.
I forgot all about you, Doc. Where have you been?
It's only been 3 or 4 minutes. I've never had such a disturbing night since I had my first patient. But at first I was afraid to leave the house.
And why were you so afraid, Dr. Thrummig?
There were two men sitting in front of my place in the car. Oh, good evening, Nero.
Were they waiting for you, Doctor?
Well, why not? Very likely. Since she called me, I've been so completely unnerved.
Here, Doc, have some brandy.
Oh, no. You know I never... Well, a small one. I am upset. You understand, Archie. Oh, my, that's better.
Just who called you and upset you so?
Oh, hello, Nira. Did someone call me? When?
You phoned me frantically that a woman called you. I couldn't understand you on the phone.
Oh, yes, yes, poor Gloria. She was cut off.
Oh, Gloria. Did you say Gloria?
But didn't I? I thought I did. Oh, dear. What did you say?
I said Gloria.
Oh, my, isn't that strange? I thought that's what I said. No, no, no more, please.
We just had a call from Gloria. Who is Gloria?
Well, you remember. We all went to school together. Oh, you do too remember. Gloria, you know, she was...
Just what is Gloria's last name, Dr. Thrumming?
Well, it was Gloria Barnsworth. I don't know what it is now.
That's what she was trying to say to me, Barnsworth.
Did she tell you where to find her?
No, she didn't. Oh, dear me. She was just about to tell me when I said I'd call you and Archie and get your help. And then she was cut off.
How do you know she's the Gloria Barnsworth you knew and I'm supposed to know?
My. Could you open the windows?
Why, yes.
Archie.
Oh, sorry, Doc. The air outside's contaminated.
Oh, is that so? With what?
Oxygen.
Oh, these factories. Oh, well, I found her picture in an old class photo. Here it is.
Oh, yeah, now I remember. But, Doc, you and this gal were several years ahead of me in school. I'm not in this picture, so she must be about 40 now.
Well, gentlemen, you both seem to have the situation well in hand now. So, if you'll excuse me, I will retire to my room.
Yes, but we don't have anything figured out yet.
But you will. Let me know in the morning how successful you have been. Good night.
Well, anyway, a woman called here, and just as she was about to tell me who she was and her address, she was cut off as though she was strangled.
Yeah, Archie, did you say someone strangled her?
I don't know, Doc. I hope not. Well, let's start our search along Ronaldo Road.
Archie, don't answer it. They're after me. The men in the car, they saw me come in here.
After you, nonsense.
They found out Gloria phoned me. Don't let them in.
Now, how could you know all that?
Oh, dear me. Do you mind? A short one? I'm so weak tonight. Please, Archie, don't open it. I warn you.
Just relax, Doc. I'll handle this. Good evening.
Evening. Are you Archie Goodwin?
No, he is.
Yes. No, I'm not. He is.
Put up your hands. Unhook the night chain. Now just turn off this light.
Oh, I told you.
Where's Wolf?
Oh, he's been in bed for hours.
And who is this little man?
Why, I'm...
Don't you know? This is my brother Cuthbert.
Yes, he's quite right. I'm a bit older than he is.
Shut up, Cuthbert.
All right, get your coats and hats off that rack.
What for?
We're all going for a little ride along the river, and it's a bit chilly.
Oh, dear me. I feel faint. I'm getting dizzy.
Get your hat.
Yes, sir.
And put that bottle down.
But it's so cold out there.
Get along. Here's the car. Now, Mr. Goodwin, hand over that gun in your pocket.
But I haven't got... Okay, there you are.
Thank you. Now get in the car. You get in the front seat with the driver, Goodwin. Your brother can get back with me. Okay, you know where we're going, driver.
Yeah, but what?
Get going.
But do you know who this guy is?
I do. Why?
Well, now, look, Well, this guy is Archie Goodwin.
What if he is?
Well, this won't work. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be Goodwin. He's with Miro Wolf.
What's your name, pal? I can't see you, but I seem to recognize your voice.
Well, you see, it was like this. I was in a...
Are you going to shut up and start driving?
Okay, I'm going.
Now, see here, it's getting very late. I don't like this. Where are you taking us?
Keep calm, Doc.
Yeah, don't get excited. Just take it easy. Listen, Goodwin, I got a record
for
you.
Shut up, you two.
What's the idea back of all this, friend?
We're off the road here, driver.
Yes, but we're way out in the country.
Now, we'll all get out here.
Now, wait a minute.
I said get out. You too, driver.
Oh, now, wait a second. What's the big idea?
Now, all of you start walking over to that clump of trees. Go on.
What's he going to do?
What do you think?
Okay, that's good. Just stand there. Now get out your gun, driver.
Oh, now, wait a minute. This is
the
way
you... Get out your gun, and don't turn around, driver. Now let him have it. Go on, or I'll kill you.
I don't go in for this kind of stuff. Besides,
shoot him and empty your gun into them. Go on. Now just drop your gun on the ground. There. Now I will take Goodwin's gun, and after I finish with it, I'll just toss it over beside his body.
You what? Hey, now, wait a minute.
You'll notice I have gloves on.
Hey, Doc. Dr. Thrumming.
Oh.
You all right, Doc?
Oh, Archie, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I got you into this. I can't last long.
Where are you hit?
Tell Nero I make him a present of his new bridge work I put in.
Let me have a look at you.
I wanted to die in my bed with my friends around
You're not bleeding.
I wanted the choir to sing. What? I'm not bleeding?
No.
Are you?
No. And Driver was a bad shot. He missed both of them.
Then what am I doing down here on the ground?
You fainted at the first shot. I dropped purposely on the second shot. He missed every time. Come on, get up from there. We're very lucky people.
What became of them?
Hand me my gun.
Oh, is this your gun?
Wrap it in his handkerchief. Come over here. Yep. Here he is, the driver.
And he's dead. This is dreadful, Archie. What do we do now?
You got a lighter?
Here's my pocket flash.
Well, here's his gun beside him. Don't touch it. Have a look through his pockets. I knew what he meant when he said he had a record for me someplace. A picture of a girl says, to Mike from Violet. Mike. This fellow's face is certainly familiar, but I can't... Hey, wait a minute. Mike Jordan, that's it.
Mike Jordan?
Yeah, Wolf cleared him on a frame-up 3 years ago, and this girl Violet is an entertainer in a nightclub downtown.
Violet, yes, but what does all this have to do with Gloria?
Strange, there's no other identification on him. Maybe the other guy took it off of him. Well, now we got to find Violet.
How? We can't even find Gloria.
I think now that this guy Mike Jordan missed us deliberately. Let's start hoofing it back to that last crossroad. There was a telephone there. I'll call Nero. So that's the story so far, Mr. Wolf. Sorry to wake you up, but we wanted you to know.
Yes, we did. Oh, such a night.
What was your reason for telling the man that Dr. Thrumming was your brother?
Well, I didn't want him to know that it was Doc because Gloria had called Doc and he must have known about it.
And the driver turned out to be Mike Jordan. And what did Mike say to you in the car?
Well, he didn't finish, but he said, I got a record for you, Goodwin. And then the man shot him up.
And when you located Violet at her place, she was cataloging recordings, hmm? Bring her in here now, Archie. Sit down, Dr. Thrumming.
Yes, I am a bit weary.
Come in, Violet. Violet, this is...
Hey, wait a minute. You're Nero Wolf.
Sit down, Miss Violet.
Oh, what's the idea, Mr. Goodwin? Why'd you bring me here?
Well, you look at this photo. It says, to Mike from Violet.
Where'd you get this?
I got it, Violet. What we want to know is, where's Mike now? What's he doing? Can you tell us where he lives?
What's Mike done now?
Can you tell us his address?
Maybe.
Do you know who he has been working for?
Yeah. A guy with a big car and a lot of dough.
You've seen this man?
Yeah, kind of a good-looking guy. I think his name is Durant or something like that.
I understand you've been occupying yourself with cataloging some phonograph recordings.
Yeah, that's what I was doing when Mr. Goodwin came in. Mike's got a home recorder over at his place.
Do you have all the records that have been made on the machine so far?
No, just what we made in the last week. Lots more at his place.
Do you and Mike know of a woman named Gloria?
No, at least I don't remember.
It was on Rinaldo Road. Gloria Barnsworth was her maiden name.
Where is this Rinaldo Road? I don't know.
It's in Westchester, we think.
I've never been there. What has Mike done, Mr. Wolf? Is it bad?
As a matter of fact, Mike is in the clear.
Good.
There's no charge against him, and there never will be. You haven't seen him for a couple of days?
No, and I never go to his apartment unless him and some guests are there. Do you know where he is?
Will you give me the address of his apartment?
Okay. 324 East 35th Street.
Thank you very much, young lady.
What's all so mysterious? Oh, something's happened to Mike. I can tell by the way you talk.
Very well, Archie. You have a special visit to make. Look for the machine, and it's quite late, so you had best hurry.
Well, I'm going with you, Archie. Good night, Nero. Oh, I mean, good morning. Oh, I don't even know what day it is.
Come along, Violet. We'll drop you at your place first. Well, here we are, Doc.
Yes, has his name right on it. Mike Jordan.
We're fairly certain that no one's in there. Hey, what do you know? It isn't locked. The lights are on.
I know.
Listen.
Yes, a light humming noise. Huh. But where is it coming from?
Over in that corner, those wall cabinets.
There it is. A radio. And a phonograph combination.
Yes, and a recording machine. And the recording arm's still down on the record. Just lift it off and put the playback needle on. Yeah, there we are.
Look, I don't go in for that kind of stuff. You've been working for me for several weeks now, haven't you?
Well, sure, boss, but I never went in for no kind of...
We're going to pick this guy up and take him for a little ride.
It ain't my line.
All you do is drive the car.
Okay, I'll take a chance. But remember, I'm just the driver of your car. If anything happens, I didn't know nothing.
You'll do just as I say. Incidentally, I know a lot about you. Things the police would like to know.
Okay. Okay, I'm working for you. I came out to Ronaldo Road to make an honest living. But I see I'm right back where I started. And worse. The guy just ain't got a chance. Oh, remind me. I've got to phone the place.
Well, Doc?
He did say Ronaldo Road.
And that's where our Gloria called from, so they're all tied in together. Come along, Doc. We're going back to Mr. Wolf again, and we'll just take this record with us.
Well, Archie, I guess this phonograph was worthwhile after all. Yes, indeed.
Hey, don't you find this a very interesting recording, Nero?
I'm sure we're going to add it to our collection.
And these are the two men who took you on the ride.
That's right. But we're really no further along in our desire to help Gloria.
That's right. Where on Ronaldo Road? Boss, if we can find the address, will you go with us down there or over there or wherever it is?
I might. And you already have the clue to the address.
We have. Where?
In that phonograph recording. Play it again, Archie. Just the part where he uses the telephone. And slow the speed way down. Then take down the numbers I call off.
Okay, boy.
Six. Five. Three. Two. Two. Three. That's enough. By slowing down the record, we were able to count the clicks of each number he used on the dial. Now, there's the number the man called. We hope it is on Ronaldo Road. Have Inspector Kramer get the address of that number combination, and we are ready to make our assault.
I'll call Kramer, and then I'll get the car out. It hadn't been out for weeks. Maybe it won't start.
No such luck, Archie, I assure you. No such luck.
Oh, here it is. I think we must go through this big gate.
Yes, there's the number. 23 Ronaldo.
Slip up to the entrance as softly as possible. Turn out your headlamps.
Here we are, boss. Easy now getting out.
Don't pull, Doctor. Don't pull on. There we are. Now come along.
Yeah, spooky sort of place, isn't it?
All big houses are like that. Must be 20 rooms.
Yeah. There's not a light in the place.
Use the knocker, Archie.
Uh-oh, stand back. Here comes somebody.
Yes?
Is Gloria in?
What?
Gloria?
And who are you?
We are here to see Gloria. Come.
It's this hour of the night? Certainly not.
Just a moment. She's an old friend of mine. Yes, and his too. He's Archie.
My good man, what is your name?
Jennings, sir. In the household is in bed at this hour.
What is it, Jennings? Who's at the door?
They're asking for you, Miss Gloria.
For me? Well, come in, gentlemen. You may go, Jennings. Please.
Very well, miss. Just as you say.
Now, what did you want?
Say, Doc, is this the Gloria?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't seem...
Are you Gloria?
Yes.
Well, why did you call us?
Oh, then you're Archie Goodwin.
Yes, and I'm Dr. Thrumming. But you
are... I called you because I need your help. Desperately.
Gloria, what is going on here this hour? Oh, and who are these gentlemen?
Well, you see, Uncle, Mr. Goodwin came...
Came to see you? Why?
Well,
I think you'd better go to your room, my dear. Don't you think that is best? Your room and rest?
No, I don't want to. I won't.
Go to your room.
No, I won't. I can't. All those people walk in and out. They want to kill me.
Jennings, take her to her room.
Yes, sir. Come along, please.
No, I won't. I won't. Let me go. There are hundreds of people. They'll kill me.
Come along.
No. Please.
I'm so sorry. But there's nothing we can do with her. Now, Mr. Goodwin.
Yeah?
What is it you wish? The girl called you Uncle. Oh, pardon me. I'm Nero Wolf. How do you do, Mr. Wolf? Yes, she called me Uncle, but I'm not really a relative. I'm Dr. Gunther, retained by the family. As you can see, the girl is quite ill.
Well, we're old friends of Gloria's, and we'd like to see her.
But you just saw her. We don't refer to this young lady. We have in mind the elderly Gloria. Now, come, Dr. Gunther. You know to whom we refer.
What?
You mean the girl's aunt? Well, it's very strange. If you are a friend of the aunt's, that you are not aware of her condition.
Her condition?
Yes. The aunt has been bedridden for nearly a year. Paralysis. And it seems to be most coincidental with your visit, but she passed away this afternoon.
Died? Gloria?
This afternoon? But how could that be?
We'd like to see the remains, Dr. Gunther.
Yes, we'd like to see the remains. Just where are they?
They are here, Mr. Goodwin. And if you and your brother and Mr. Wolf will step this way to the small parlor. There you are, gentlemen. I'll leave you alone. I'll be in the library. Well, gentlemen, there she is. What do you say? Do you recognize this woman?
Well, yeah. It's been many years, but that is Gloria Barnesworth.
Well, good heavens, yes. It's Gloria, all right. Poor woman. I remember now. She married a very wealthy manufacturer named Kenton, who died. She's remained a widow, I guess.
He said she died this afternoon. Are you sure it was an elderly woman who called you this evening? And by the way, just feel her forehead.
It's warm. She couldn't have been dead more than an hour.
She isn't dead. No signs of pulse. Your cigarette case, please. Very slight moisture. Respiration barely perceptible. She's under heavy narcosis. Been given a heavy dose lately.
Let's get out of here.
Wait. Do you recognize the uncle, rather Dr. Gunther?
No, do you, Thrumming?
No.
Does he look like the man who took you for a ride?
It was too dark, boss, and he was all bundled up in heavy clothes.
Let's get out of here.
That door was locked after we came in.
He's right. Come on, Doc, let's put our shoulders to it. One, two,
go!
Well, gentlemen, what on earth does this mean?
Why'd you lock the door?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a spring lock. I had no intention of locking the door. And I suggest, Archie, that you have it repaired. And now, Archie, will you step to the door and let Inspector Kramer in? He followed us up the driveway.
Yeah, about time. Getting cold out here.
Inspector Kramer, this is Dr. Gunther. In that room is a woman he claims is dead. She is actually under the heavy influence of narcotics.
Yeah? Well, who is she?
Mrs. Gloria Kenton, widow of the wealthy shoe manufacturer.
And this attractive young lady coming down the stairs is supposed to be mentally ill, which I do not believe. Her name is Gloria, too. A niece of the elder Gloria.
But Archie and I both knew Gloria Barnesworth. Kenton.
Yeah, I get it.
And I suggest that this man is not a doctor, but his young Gloria's husband, and they're attempting to force the Aunt Gloria to change her will in their favor.
This is utterly ridiculous.
The aunt was able to phone Doc Thromick and me tonight, but she was apparently caught in the act.
And this man, who is posing as the uncle, hired Mike Jordan to drive his car while he picked up Archie with the intent of killing him.
Well, this is the same man?
The same. And if Mike Jordan hadn't recognized Archie, both of you would be quite dead. This man double-crossed Mike and killed him, believing that the whole thing would be blamed on Mike. Mike deliberately missed.
All right, so what are you going to do about it? Come on, let's get out of here fast.
Look out, he's a cop.
All right, now get those hands up and keep them up.
Come along, Archie. I have another appointment. The inspector can handle it from here on.
Oh, dear me. What happened? Am I all right?
Yeah, you just fainted again when the shooting started.
Oh. Really quite fortunate that Mike Jordan recorded that conversation. Fortunate indeed.
How did you know this uncle was the same guy who took us for a ride?
First, by his speech pattern, he is undoubtedly a Canadian. But you must have missed the most important slip-up.
What was that?
When he escorted us to see the body, he said to you, Archie, if you and your brother and Mr. Wolfe will step this way... Now, how would he believe that Dr. Thromick was your brother? No one mentioned it.
Of course, the clue I planted and then missed myself.
Quite right, Archie, quite right. What time is it?
8 a.m. I certainly appreciate your coming out for me on this deal.
Oh, but I didn't do it just for you. There is an Orchid Lovers Convention this morning at 9 o'clock.
What? And you mean...
Yes. I'm sure you'll enjoy it tremendously. Both of you.
Oh, brother.
What's that?
Nothing, Doc. Nothing at all.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by John Edison was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin and Howard McNear, Gene Bates, Peter Leeds, Bill Johnstone, Grace Lenard, and Jay Novello. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Final Page. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
Hey, everyone, I just thought I would step in here at the beginning of Box 13 to kind of give you a little bit of overlay of also what else Box 13 reminds me of. And I mentioned let George do it. And I was right about that because, you know, George Valentine also had a P.O. Box. And people could write through the newspaper to the newspaper P.O. box, and then it would be forwarded to George and his secretary. And with Alan Ladd, of course, Box 13, and that's a P.O. box, which he would have to go down to the post office to get his mail for adventure. So it's pretty much a ripoff of Let George Do It, with one exception, was that half the country never even heard of Let George Do It. It was only through collections that people found out about Let George Do It, because it was only heard on the West Coast from the Mutual Don Lee Network. So Let George Do It was only heard out in the West Coast and to the Colorado Rockies, and everything past that, no one heard about it. So either that, and in that way, Alan Ladd was kind of lucky that they didn't point the finger at him and say, hey, you're copying, Let George Do It. But anyway, So I just thought I would throw that in there and enjoy the show. And I'll see you back here next week.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, Box 13, Box 13, Box 13, Box 13.
Well, this is great. Rain, rain, rain. I'll bet even the ducks wouldn't come out in weather like this. But me, I'm an idiot. I gotta go and take up a profession like being a writer. I couldn't take up something easy. Oh, no, not me. I gotta be a writer so I can be out on nice, cold, wet nights, beating my brains out, looking for an idea. Idea. Deadline. Oh, sure. Mustn't forget that ever-loving deadline. What a way to make a living. I could have stayed a reporter at the Star-Times and had nice assignments. Like listening to political speeches. Or covering the opening of a new manhole. Oh, no, but not me. I have to write fiction. Do it the hard way. Well, I might as well take the usual hand, open the usual door to the usual place, and hear the usual comments.
Hi, Mr. Holliday.
Hiya.
Coffee, coffee boy. Hiya, Dan.
What do you say, Ed?
Better to want you.
How goes it, Holliday?
Oh, pretty good.
Where's the makeup on page 4?
Hi, Mr. Holliday.
How are you?
Hiya, Mr. Holliday.
Hello, Susie. Anything in box 13?
Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Now for Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
What a character I am. Standing here in front of the want-ad counter in a newspaper office while the rain runs down off my coat collar into my shoes.
Mr. Holliday.
I gotta ruin my last pair of... Huh? What's that, Susie?
I said there's a message in box 13 for you. Here.
Oh. Thanks, Susie.
Don't mention it. Say, aren't you going to open it?
Sorry. Not here, Susie.
You know, you got all of us down here at the Star-Times awful curious, Mr. Holliday, running that ad.
Have I?
You've been running it for months. Why don't you change it?
Well, I haven't read it for so long, I've forgotten the words. How's it go?
Don't you remember? Adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. How about that?
I still like it.
You'd do a lot better with adventure if you ran your picture with the ad.
Oh, no, thanks. Just keep on running it the way it is.
But, gee, aren't you ever going to tell us what you do for a living? Why you keep running that ad?
Susie, same old question, same old answer. No. Well, if I'm not doing anything else, at least I've got the people at the Star-Times curious. They'd think my brain cells were 10 feet off first base if they knew why I really run that ad. Maybe they are. You can help a person out of great trouble and gain an adventure for yourself if you call Chester 8945 and ask for Carla Williams. Chester 8945. Carla Williams. Sounds like an interesting name. Well, I hope she's home.
Hello?
This is the man from Box 13.
Oh?
Tell me, are you serious, or was that ad just a joke?
No joke, Miss Williams.
Are you willing to try anything?
Well, that depends what's on your mind.
I can't discuss it over the phone. Will you meet me?
Of course.
There's a little French restaurant down on Ledge Street. Meet me there in the cocktail lounge.
What time?
Make it 10 o'clock tonight. Tell the bartender you want to speak to Carla Williams.
French restaurant on Ledge, 10 o'clock. Oh, what block number?
The 600 block. You won't fail me. You'll be there.
Lady, if it were winter, I'd come with bells on. This sounds like the beginning of a very interesting story. Beautiful woman in distress calls on struggling writer for help. Only she doesn't know I'm a writer, and I don't know she's beautiful.
What's yours, mister?
Oh, I'm looking for a Carla Williams.
Oh, yeah. She's sitting over there in that front booth.
Thanks. Carla Williams?
Yes.
Oh-ho. Carla Williams could be material for a love story or an adventure story. Or maybe both.
And do you have a name?
Oh, yes. Dan Holliday.
I'll sit down.
Well, thanks.
I'm agreeably surprised. I didn't think a person would get such a satisfactory reply from a ward ad.
And I didn't think I'd get such a nice reply.
You're wondering about me, aren't you? You're wondering why you're here.
Naturally.
Well, I'm being blackmailed.
That's a very nasty business.
I've been paying blackmail for 5 years, but tonight's the end. I'm to meet him in 15 minutes and make the final payment and get the letters.
Well, that sounds like the end of your troubles.
But is it? I can't be sure. That's why I need your help.
But what can I do?
Well, you can be there as a witness. You can make sure this is the end. You can see that I get the letters and get away safely.
Lady, you need the police.
Why? To make sure everything I've kept hidden for 5 years comes out in the open?
Maybe a friend could do it.
My friends would be the last ones on earth I'd want to know. Are you afraid?
No.
You advertised for adventure?
Blackmail isn't my idea of adventure.
I'm sorry if my trouble doesn't measure up to your expectations. The best I could do on such short notice.
Uh-oh. Well, I guess I had that coming.
Maybe this isn't your idea of adventure, but I do need help. I need help badly. Let's leave it at that.
Now, that might appeal to my early Boy Scout training.
Then you will?
I always help ladies across blackmail raps. What happens if your friend makes trouble?
We can't make any trouble.
He seems to have done all right for the past 5 years.
There won't be any trouble if you're alone. Here, reach under the table. Take this.
Now, wait a minute. This is a gun.
Put it in your pocket. Don't let anyone see it.
This is supposed to make everything all right?
Well, you won't need it, believe me. I thought it would make you feel better.
It makes me feel like a policeman. And I still think a policeman is what you want.
But you promised.
I said maybe.
I have to meet him in 15 minutes. Please help me.
Where do we go?
His apartment.
Far from here?
We can make it if we leave now. What do you say?
Maybe I should never have been a Boy Scout. I watch Carla Williams closely as we ride over to the apartment where she's to meet this man she's been talking about. She's perfectly groomed with a certain niceness about her, except for those twin furrows of worry between her eyes and a cold look of anxiety. I don't think I would like to have her angry at me, though.
That's funny. You should have been here 20 minutes ago. Huh.
Why don't you try the door?
It was unlocked.
Might as well wait inside. Unless you have any objections.
Not at all. There's a light switch on your right. The living room is straight ahead.
Say, you sound like you're familiar with the place.
Why not? I've been here many times before.
There's a light on in there. Suppose he might have fallen asleep?
Waiting for his money? Hardly.
Well, this is more like it. This spot is nicely furnished.
With my money. But at least we can sit down and make us... Oh, no!
Miss Williams, what's the matter? What happened?
By the floor, by the desk, look.
You stay here.
Well.
You'd better call the police. He's dead.
Dead?
Yeah, he's been shot. Once. Through the heart.
I'm glad.
He's the one? The man who was blackmailing you?
Yes. Could you go through his pockets? He must have some of those letters with him. Look in his coat pocket.
Just a minute, Miss Williams. You don't understand. This man has been murdered. We've got to call the police.
Murdered? What makes you so sure?
There's no gun around any place.
Just the same, before the police come, his pockets. Please, I've got to have those letters.
Okay. But it isn't right. Are these what you wanted?
Let me see. Yeah. They're all here.
Now, where's the telephone? We've got to get the police up here, and fast.
There is no phone.
No? How do you know without looking, unless...
I told you, I've been here before.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Well, go downstairs. There's a payphone in the lobby. Tell the police to come up here right away. And come back, and we'll wait for them.
You're not planning to leave while I'm downstairs, are you?
No. Here's a nickel. Just dial O and tell the operator you want the police. Hurry.
But you'll be here.
Call, I said. I wanted adventure, so I put an ad in a newspaper. And I certainly found what I wanted. Only this isn't good. The man is lying dead on the floor of this apartment. And Carla Williams and I will have to go down to the police headquarters and answer a million questions. All of them embarrassing. I hope she's made the calls. Say, that's funny. Why would there be a telephone directory in a place where there's no phone? Or maybe there is one. Of course, right here in the hallway. I wonder why she said there was no phone here. Maybe it's been disconnected.
Operator. This is the operator.
Oh, fine. I've written a dozen stories like this. And whenever I've reached this point, the hero always finds that he's been framed. Framed? The gun. Yeah, I gotta look at that gun. Gotta find out if it's been fired. One shot has been fired. And the police surgeon will probably find a bullet from this gun in that dead man's body. The police. Seems like little Carla took care of that. Me, I'm going to take care of something else. I'm leaving.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Once again, Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, right now I'm wishing I were half as smart as the heroes of some of my stories. I've got a murder, strange woman, a strange apartment, and a strange feeling that this might not work out to a happy ending. What I need is a cab, a quick trip home, a short drink, and a long, long think.
Sure is a rotten night to be out.
Yeah, it sure is.
Never seen such rain.
Not so good.
Cops are sure busy tonight.
Sounds like it.
I wonder who they're after.
I wouldn't have any idea.
Could be a murderer, you know.
Yeah, just could be.
Just a night for a murder.
Perfect.
How come you got so wet?
It's raining.
I know, but how come?
My umbrella needs recovering.
You want the Normandy Arms?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's your building up ahead, but it looks like you got lots of company.
What do you mean?
Them's prowl cars, mister. All over the place.
Oh, this is very nice. Carla Williams called the police and must have mentioned my name in passing. I'm the type of interesting young fellow that any cop would like to meet. Especially with a murder weapon in my pocket. Tonight, Mr. Holliday, I think you will sleep elsewhere.
Want me to pull right in where all them cops are?
No, they look busy, so maybe we'd better not bother them. Just keep on driving.
But this is where you live, ain't it?
I don't feel like going home tonight.
I could shove them cops aside, you know. This is a legitimate hack.
That would be fun, but don't bother.
You're the boss, mister. Where to?
There's a place down on Franklin Avenue. 1612, I think.
I know that place. That's the cheapest hotel in town.
Yes, I believe it is.
Hey, how do you know about a place like that?
I got information there for a story.
What a joint like that. What are you going there tonight for?
To sleep.
You writing another story?
I'm living one.
Living one?
Yes, I left my typewriter at home.
Well, Mr. Holliday, to what do we owe this great pleasure?
Maybe you're just lucky.
More research on the seamier side of life?
No, not tonight. I'm looking for a room.
A room? Might I remind you, Mr. Holliday, this ain't the Roney Plaza.
Have you got a room?
Any particular exposure you might like?
The less, the better.
I'm sure we can fix you up. That is, if you're willing to pay in advance.
Buck and a half, how much?
$25, Mr. Holliday.
$25?
And if you committed the murder, it'll be $50, Mr. Holliday.
Come on, talk straight.
I don't want any trouble with the police.
What makes you think I'll cause you trouble with the police?
Little box called the radio, police calls. They're a lot of fun to listen to, Mr. Holliday.
Yeah, I'll bet they are.
You'll be comfortable here and safe.
I'm beginning to wonder if I could afford it.
With your money? Don't make me laugh.
I wasn't trying to. Where's your phone?
The one on the wall costs a nickel.
Thanks.
You're staying tonight, Mr. Holliday?
In a hurry.
You. Where are you?
Still in town. What about the police? They with you?
What do you think?
Thanks for putting in a good word for me.
I had to. They made me. Look, I want to talk to you.
I know that feeling. I want to talk to you, too.
I can explain everything.
Like a gun with one bullet fired?
Yes.
A missing telephone that wasn't?
That, too.
Oh. Then you're just the little girl I want to have words with.
Can you come over here right away?
Are the police there?
That's right. Name a place, I'll meet you.
The corner of 6th and Victor, 10 minutes.
Right.
Follow me, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, where to?
Your room. This ain't the Roney Plaza, but the service is just the same.
I've changed my mind.
You're not staying?
Your rates are too high. I'll drop in again after I've made a fortune. Now I know how the fox feels when the hounds are closing in. Someday I'll have to write a story about a fox. Put that guy Burgess and his Peter Rabbit out of business. Hey, cab!
Oh, it's you again.
Yeah, I get around, don't I?
I thought you were set for the night.
No running ice water. 6th and Victor.
Where did you say you wanted to go?
6th and Victor.
But there ain't no place to sleep there.
Oh, I'm not sleepy. I just want to examine a fire hydrant.
Okay, mister. I'm glad it's your money and not mine.
If we keep on, it will be your money.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Say, is that tonight's extra lying up there?
Sure. Want to take a look at it?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
That picture they got of you on the front page is lousy.
What picture?
You look like you was facing the camera through a screen door.
Here, let me see that. Well, 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 this is just wonderful. Prominent writer named by police. Carla Williams accuses Dan Holliday of the murder of Harry Granger. Grief-stricken girl witnessed the murder of her fiancé. Well, nice going, Carla. It's your word against mine, plus the evidence against me. Now I know why they wrote that song, I get along without you very well.
Well, there's six and Victor.
Cruise on by.
You ain't gonna stop?
I haven't made up my mind.
Looks like a couple of cops waiting around for somebody.
That's the way it looks to me.
That might be the law.
Yes, they might be.
What do you want to do now?
Get away from here and find a city directory. A chap by the name of Harry Granger should have a home. And he should have stayed in it. I'm either just ahead of the police or right behind them. And if this game keeps up much longer, I'll be right with them.
Yeah?
Oh, Harry Granger lived here.
He did. You the police?
Well, no, not exactly.
A reporter?
I used to be.
Come here, you. I wonder if you're one of them blackmailers.
Just a minute, friend. My coat rips easy.
No, I guess not. If you were, you wouldn't be here.
Mind if I step in?
Come in, come in. This whole thing's got me all upset.
You don't say. Oh, you said something about a blackmailer.
That's what I'm here for. I came to help Harry get rid of those rats.
You mean he was being blackmailed?
For 5 years. I lent him most of the money to pay off with. I told him he was a sucker, but it looks like I got here too late.
You heard what happened?
Saw it in the papers on my way from the station.
Have you told the police?
Not yet, but I'm going to. Who did you say you were?
I didn't say.
You know something about this?
I think I do now. I began to see the light when the city directory listed this place as Granger's apartment.
Can I help?
You might get into trouble.
How?
Breaking into a woman's apartment. After this, I'll use a fire escape and more of my stories are the most interesting things about a building. The man from Homicide will be out in the hall seeing that no one comes in here. I'll have to work fast, Holliday. You'll have to find something that the police weren't looking for. There must be something. Bills, letters, cards, that's no good. Look for the obvious. That's what I always have my hero doing. Let's see, what's the obvious? Oh, the living room. Now, let's see, that's where the body was. Nothing obvious there. On the desk. No. The table. No. The fireplace. Hello. A small frame snapshot. And I think it might be just what I'm looking for. My old friend the bartender and Carla Williams. And with your arms around each other. You know, you two make a nice couple, a wonderful couple. I wonder if they'll let you have your arms around each other in the electric chair.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, I finally made it. I'm down at police headquarters in the office of a tall, gangly character named Lieutenant Kling. Of course, a few things have happened. Carl and the bartender were brought in, too. So much cooler than I am. Oh, those cell bars give you such fine ventilation.
Holliday!
What's that, Lieutenant?
I said you were a very lucky citizen. After what Carla Williams told us, we thought you were guilty.
If she'd have told me that story, I'd have believed it myself. Proving that she and the bartender were married put a crimp in her act as the injured fiancé.
Yeah, you showed it up as the same old racket. Smart woman teams up with smart man to blackmail innocent citizen. But just the same, I think you should stick to your writing and let police work alone.
Lieutenant, I'll have that printed and framed in blonde walnut.
Hang it on the wall?
No, around my neck.
I'm glad to hear you say that. You may not always have a guy like this Grant who backed up your story.
Oh, Granger's friend?
That's the one.
Say, he's a nice fella. Wants me to visit him on his ranch.
Why don't you do that?
Riding the range all day when I could be cooking in town?
Pardon me. Homicide, Lieutenant Kling. Oh, yes, yes, he's here. It's for you, Holliday.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Mr. Holliday, this is Susie.
Yes, Susie?
Can you come down to the Star Times right away?
Well, what's the matter?
There's another letter for you in Box 13.
Oh, no.
Should I open it and read it to you?
Oh, not now, Susie. I've got enough material to last me for a month, 3 weeks of which will be a rest.
Tell me where. Maybe I can come down and help you.
You really want to help me?
Sure I do, Mr. Holliday.
Then put that letter back in Box 13.
But Mr. Holliday...
Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in Wild Harvest. Box 13 is written and directed by Ted Hediger. Original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. This is a Mayfair production.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.